Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the August 3rd meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I would have a few announcements, and that is if you have cell phones or other electronic devices, please silence them. And that includes our legislators, please. If there were an emergency like a fire, there are exits to the back of the room on my right, to the front of the room on my left. And please don't use the elevator if there were to be a fire. We don't have any public hearings tonight, so we will open the meeting. And I'll ask folks to stand, and we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. I forgot to take the roll call. But I don't have a proclamation anyway, so. May we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk and Mr. Dennis will be a few minutes late. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa will be arriving later this evening. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
10 members present.
We do have a quorum. And again, presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm not aware of any need for an executive session tonight. John? Joe? So we'll get you home a little earlier that way. Let's move to privilege of the floor for the public. Anyone who would like to speak may speak on any subject for up to 3 minutes. We have a countdown clock on the wall to my left. At the end of the 3 minutes, there will be an audible signal. If you're still speaking at that time, I would ask that you please conclude. We ask you to sign a blue card and found in the back of the room and pass it up if you haven't already done that. And by signing the card, you're agreeing to the rules of the privilege of the floor. You're agreeing to a three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. I have just one blue card so far. Anna Kells, please state your name and your municipality, please.
I know you guys all know me. You've heard me many times before. Anna Kellis from Ithaca. Thank you for letting me speak each time and for making such intense and thorough consideration for the library project. It's really important to all of us, I think. I guess just as a last word, I know that there's a chance that this may be the final vote in one direction or another. The community has put a huge amount of effort, as have you all, to do their due diligence and research on this topic. I think that we've consistently, at least from my experience, come down on the side of which project makes the most tax revenue. It's the Franklin Project. Which one fits to scale for the community? It's the Franklin Project. Which one's the most sustainable? It's the Franklin Project. Which one is the one that the city wants? It's the Franklin Project. Which one is the one that majority of the community wants? It's the Franklin Project. I think that any stance that I've looked at this from, the answer is the Franklin Project. And I think that the community feels very passionate about this. The number of people that have showed up over the last couple of months speaks highly. I think that there are a lot of people that are very tired, but I can tell you that for myself, I get phone calls, emails, Facebook communications constantly asking for updates, and a lot of goodwill that's being sent, and really strong prayers that we can preserve this building. And I can speak to them and for them, saying that I know that they will remember. Whatever vote is chosen here, I think that the constituents will really remember this one. I've never seen so many people come out for a building, and that's really powerful. And I've spoken to a lot of researchers up at Cornell recently, and one of them really stuck out, George Haskup, who said, he shook his head and said, I just came back from a sabbatic in Europe. And it was the most powerful experience. And what I'm seeing in the United States is 50 years behind the times. There is an awareness there that we are really lacking. We are still stuck in the bigger is better mentality. And what they find is that the bigger it is, if it's out of scale, it creates isolation. And building to scale and retaining the character actually creates vibrancy economically and socially. And he sees that over and over and over again. And so that was extremely powerful, and it was something that I will never forget. And I will continue to promote that in this community, because that is something that we can choose here tonight. So I ask with all of my heart and my mind and all the research that I've done, put into this and the time, that you make the choice for the Franklin Project. So thank you so much for your time and your efforts.
Thank you for your comments. I have Patty Sipman.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I rode down on my bike, so if I'm a little out of breath, bear with me.
Take your time.
Thank you. I just wanted to voice my support for the Franklin Project. Having served on the City of Ithaca's Rental Housing Advisory Commission, first under former Mayor Carolyn Peterson and then under Savante Myrick, I really understand the need for density in this town, and I recognize that there's a huge need for more housing units in this town. But I would say to you that the difference between 60 housing units and 22 is a negligible data point by which to prefer one project over another, given the density needs of the city. And putting a large project in a neighborhood where it's out of scale, there's not enough off-street parking for the larger project, seems to me a mistake, particularly given, and I don't think I'm alone in that opinion. And I urge you to, if you have made up your mind, to reconsider and support the Franklin proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Hanna. If there are any other folks that would like to speak, please do a blue card and hand it up.
Good evening, folks. Thank you very much. My name is Tom Hanna, and I come as a representative of our DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association. And I guess I've really got just a couple of things to say that I don't think that I said before. So I can promise you this is going to try to be new for your ears. I don't think I said thank you guys for putting up with the tremendous turmoil that is around the topic of the old library. I'm here to speak on that topic. And you know that I'm here because I want to speak again in favor of the Franklin Stream proposal. I remember all the way back to my last years at Cornell, before I went to work for Cornell, getting to meet a young entrepreneur by the name of Mac Travis. It was a pleasure then, and every time I do get a chance to see Mac, it's a pleasure now. He was really responsible for the Eddy Gate, which was a major development in College Town. You folks may have seen that a small property in College Town was just sold for $5.3 million. I would love to have seen that turned into a vest pocket park, frankly, for that neighborhood. But it was that kind of development that maybe is a precursor to what we're going to see in our community. I think that Ithaca, which went from one census to another without any growth in population is yesterday's Ithaca. I think we're going to see growth in our city. I think it's going to come from a variety of forces. Certainly our own zoning is leading us that way. So with that as background, I too am in favor of densification downtown. I think it's the right way. I think it's important for our city to grow. I agree with the point that was made tonight. This is a very small data point. Shouldn't be the basis for a decision. So looking at it this way, at your previous meetings, many of you have expressed your opinions, and I'm grateful for that, not just your vote, but your opinions. Some of you have shown yourself to say that there aren't even any red lines here. You're looking for some guidance and support from each other. There are a small handful of you who have been voting, and you seem to have been voting consistently for the Travis Hyde proposal. Since this is a proposal about something that's happening in my city, and you don't happen to be representing my city on this board, I would be very grateful if you would articulate clearly what your motivations are in choosing between one proposal and the other. So, Mr. Morey, Mr. McKenna, I would especially ask that of you. I see my time is up, so I'll stop there.
Thank you. Robert Studeville?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. This is an unusual project. I'm again speaking in favor of the Franklin Properties project, and it's an. Okay. And so it's an unusual project in that you have a choice. It's not that you're having a lot of projects. Generally, you don't have a choice. A developer comes in, and it's either they have their rights and they can build it according to the law. But this one, there is a choice, and it's a county-owned, publicly-owned land, and there's also existing building on it. And from my experience, it's almost better, if you can, to reuse a building. It almost always turns out better in a more interesting project. In this case, you can reuse a building. It's not that often that you get to do that. The city's going to get a lot of new buildings, dozens, maybe scores of new buildings over the next 10, 20 years. This is a chance for reusing a building, and it doesn't come along that often. And if it goes, it just goes. I would say that both of these projects are dense. The Franklin project is 25 units an acre. It's also got a significant amount of commercial. So it's not like one project is dense and the other is not dense. They're both dense. One happens to have the support of the city and the public. And I think that should be taken into account. Because if you really want to encourage density, more people to come in the future, you need to have the public support. And if people feel in the one case where there is a choice and both projects are viable, they were ignored on that case in terms of, that didn't matter. I think people may turn against that in this sort of a project in the future. So if you have two projects that are both viable, both dense, both adding something to the urban core, and one is the clear preference of the public, it seems to me that that's important to consider giving people what they want. And it would be better for the long-term development of the city. Thank you.
Excuse me, I missed where you live, sir.
Utica I live Street. In the city of Ithaca.
And your name?
My name is Robert Studeville.
Okay, thank you.
That was the last blue card I have. Was there anyone else that wanted to hand up a blue card? Okay, thank you for your comments, folks. We'll move on to public participation. Privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Do I have a municipal official tonight? Don't see one. We're always open. Folks out there in the TV audience, be happy to hear from your town supervisors, village mayors, city aldermen, city mayors, anytime that they would like to come to one of our meetings and take a few minutes to tell us what's going on in their municipalities. We would find that informative and would be very pleased to welcome them. Privilege of the floor for legislators. I'd say a couple of hands here, three hands already. Dan, then Will, then Glenn.
Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to mention a few things about the large rain event that we had in early June before it gets too far away. A few things that I learned about going to the Danby Town Board meetings that I thought might be interesting to everybody, also to the other towns if they're listening. Our town bookkeeper, Laura Shawley, gave one view on this that I hadn't really heard about much before, which was talking about the fund balance, that Danby manages its budget to have a fairly large fund balance, and that this is one of the moments when that's a really good thing to have, a large fund balance, because there were a lot of expenses up front, and maybe not, we're going to get reimbursed from the state or federal. But either way, there has to be a lot of money that goes out up front, and if you don't have a fund balance, you have to borrow that money, even on short term. Another aspect of the flooding that happened and such that I had not heard about before was mentioned by Carl Seaman, the Danby Highway Superintendent. And he talked about how a year ago they did a project where they went out and photographed a bunch of infrastructure in the town, bridges, culverts, intersections and such, and so that they had a record of what it looked like beforehand. And this is what he actually said, that, quote, this is the best thing we've ever done when it comes to emergency preparation. So that was news to me, and I share it. Hopefully the other towns either have done it or would consider doing it. And then one other thing I want to mention is we've heard a lot of appreciation for the highway crews that went out and stayed out all night while we were sleeping out there taking care of this stuff. But I just wanted to also throw out appreciation for the volunteer fire department in Danby, which was working alongside the highway crew, mostly doing things like cutting trees down that had fallen into the culverts and such. So they were the guys out there with the chainsaws while the highway crew did the machinery work. And, you know, both things needed to be done, and I was very appreciative of both sets of people for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Will?
Thank you, Mike. This past week, you probably may have heard in the news that this is the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was originally signed into law by President George H.W. Bush in 1990, and had a profound impact on our country in ways that I recently have become very aware of, because several weeks ago, my wife slipped and fell and managed to break a hip, and suddenly we had joined the world of the temporarily disabled, and were acutely aware of the barriers that one encounters with some kind of disability. The good news is, because of the ADA, there are many, many, many accommodations throughout our community, throughout our country. And we also are very, very fortunate in this community to have the Finger Lakes Independence Center, which, if you ever need it, has this amazing room filled with every piece of equipment you could possibly want to borrow that will get you through a situation. So I have a renewed appreciation for this move in our country. I was traveling in abroad earlier this year, and I can tell you that we are far, far ahead many other countries that in this realm, but there's still much to be done, and I am thankful for the ADA. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Will. Have Glenn?
Yes, thank you, Michael. Just want to let everybody know, August 14th through the 16th, Groton's going to be celebrating their 81st Groton Old Home Days. Some of the highlights this year is the 45th Art Show. It will be held in the First National Bank of Groton. The 7th Annual Vern Morton Memorial Photography Show is going to be held at the Town Hall. The Circus Variety Show will be held on Saturday. There are going to be live music and acts at the Groton Legion all the weekend. And, of course, the annual parade will be at 6 o'clock Saturday night. But I want to especially thank Kathy Thomas and Flo Allen for coming forward this year to chair the Groton Old Home Days Committee. So, thank you. Hopefully everybody's going to be there.
And I hope we'll have a Groton or a county presence in Groton for the parade. I think I see Martha. I'm not speaking well tonight. I see Marcia Lynch nodding her head over there. We've had done several of the parades in town and in the towns, and we look forward to doing Groton again this year.
Thanks, Mike.
I have Carol and then Martha.
Hi. I just didn't want to let the moment pass without talking a little bit about President Obama's announcement yesterday about the clean power plan. And this has been in the works for a while. I have mixed feelings about how the plan has played out, but or not played out yet, but that it doesn't go far enough. But naysayers have been lining up since before it was written to say this won't work. And I took the time to watch the president's speech and just wanted to convey some of the sentiments that he gave. First, the good news. Well, let me start with the bad news. I mean, for our legislature, we've passed goals that go much further than this national plan does, and we've taken many actions that go further. However, this is the biggest measure that's been proposed for the nation. It will involve a goal of 32% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, an increase in the percentage of the sources of power that must be truly renewable sources, from what the president had talked about a year ago when he started talking about this plan. And an interesting stipulation that states, first of all, power is turned over to the states to come up with plans about how to act in their particular state. New York State is ahead of most. And there'll be incentive for states that act more quickly and meet their goals. That's the good news. In his remarks, the president pointed out that technologically, we are there, that since 2008, we have actually built 20 times the amount of solar than had been there before and three times the amount of wind that's been implemented. We've cut our carbon pollution more than any other nation on Earth, although if you look at per capita figures, we're still way, way higher than anybody else. So all that stuff about China still being higher per capita, they're not nearly as high as we are. He pointed out the ways in which over and over measures that we've taken have worked in spite of naysayers. We cut lead and gas. We've reined in some acid rain. No pun intended. We're cleaning up rivers. We've cleaned up smog in L.A. He talked about his personal experience of arriving in L.A. to go to college and going for a run and not being able to breathe. And now he can run in L.A. and breathe, which is where he was making the announcement. And the biggest line of applause that he got from his audience was very interesting, and the only one where people really stood up and clapped for a long time was where he pointed out, first of all, that this plan will reduce electric bills for homeowners by an average of $85 a year. And the biggest line of applause was the way in which low-income and minority communities should not continue to be robbed of the air they breathe, and at the same time that their health care is being cut. He pointed out that, and I'm almost done, that 20% of people in the black community, in black communities, people are 20% more likely to die from asthma as those in white communities. And in Latino communities, people are 40% more likely to die from asthma. These are pretty intense statistics, so it certainly is time to do something. And while I would be the first to sit here and argue that with my fossil-free Tompkins, maybe I should use my bigger sign and visual up there. this way. That Tompkins County ought to be passing something stronger and a recommendation that we do something stronger. But I think that this is important to do, at least at the levels that the president has suggested. He's mostly talking about carbon and coal sources. And I hope that during the time for the planning committee meeting that we will maybe refer to the committee to come back to the legislature with something that might have a title, something like, we support the president's clean power plan, clean energy plan, and would further support increases in the targets. Thank you, and I'm certainly open to members of the public sending me and sending all of us articles about why this is or isn't a good plan. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. Martha Robertson.
Thanks. Well, Planned Parenthood is in the news again this week, and that's usually not a good thing for Planned Parenthood or for women. Thanks to sort of entrapment by people who manipulated a video. Republicans are now threatening to, actually they voted last night, to try to cut all federal funding from Planned Parenthood. Thankfully, they failed. The our congressman, Representative Tom Reed, supports temporarily, I'm reading from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, supports temporarily suspending federal funding for Planned Parenthood pending an investigation of the entire organization. And he says, he's quoted, I don't think anyone would object to us making sure that an investigation be completed of the entire organization, and he goes on and on. I think the thousands and thousands of people who get Planned Parenthood services in his own district probably would object if he cared to ask them. The 80% of what Planned Parenthood does is provide contraception. So just kind of, if you're not in favor of abortion, you really ought to put more money into Planned Parenthood, not less. 75% of Planned Parenthood's, and these statistics are from The Economist, that radical rag, 75% of Planned Parenthood's clients are at or below 150% of poverty. 75% of their clients. So every dollar federal money spent for contraception going to Planned Parenthood saves almost $6 in Medicaid costs for pregnancies. So if Congressman Reed got his way and we suspended Planned Parenthood, defunded Planned Parenthood pending a probably years-long investigation, the people, for example, in 2013, 500,000 women wouldn't have gotten breast cancer screening as they that number got breast cancer screening in the country, 2013. Planned Parenthood did 4.5 million tests for sexually transmitted diseases. Only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does, only 3% of their services have anything to do with abortion. And zero federal funding supports those services. I used to work at Planned Parenthood. I used to be a client of Planned Parenthood. I know that they assiduously segregate, you know, facilities and the bills and the staff and everything else. 0% of their funding comes from the federal government for abortions, and that is has been true for about 40 years. So this is an excuse that people who have always wanted to sabotage women's choices, women's reproductive health, they've always exploited excuses like this, and I think Representative Reed is completely wrong in not serving his constituents. I'm sorry he's taken this position. In fact, over the summer at town hall meetings, when a pro-Planned Parenthood group was addressing him at a town hall, then it was convenient for him to say that he stands with Planned Parenthood. So I guess it matters which way the wind blows.
Thank you, Martha. Dooley Kiefer.
Martha, thank you for recounting all the details. It really bothers me when our congressman takes the position of guilty unless proven innocent. That's just backwards. And Carol, thank you for talking about President Obama's climate speech. I thought the best thing he said was really that this is the generation that can act, because if we delay it any longer, it's too late. I was not thrilled with what he came up with. It's too little, too late, but his language was very good. And what I really had thought I would raise my hand for, because Jim didn't, was to just mention that American Pharoah, who not only got the Triple Crown, won the Haskell this last weekend. He won it easily at the top of the stretch. He just pulled away with a little urging, and he almost equaled the track record, even though his jockey eased up on him toward the end, so he wasn't running hard. He's an amazing animal.
Never look a gift horse in the mouth. Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Thank you. I have a couple of quick local things to mention. This coming Saturday, August 8th, there is a Northside Community Celebration Festival here in the Northside neighborhood. Outside the Quaker Meeting Hall, there's a group of individuals who have been meeting and talking just about neighborhood development. And so that is happening from 3 to 6 this Saturday, August 8th. And next Saturday, August 15th, is the Southside Community Center Festival from 12 to 6 p.m. Tonight also is the annual celebration of National Night Out. It's happening in your community. You know, an opportunity for certainly neighbors and law enforcement to get together, for people to work and getting to know each other, for people to start thinking about setting ways that they can support each other's safety within their neighborhoods. So that is happening as we are meeting right now, always the first Tuesday in August. I just wanted to mention those three things. I want to just make a quick comment to Dooley. I did have a chance to hear the president's speech to Carol. Thank you for bringing that up. And for me, nothing is too little, too late. Every action sometimes will help move us a little step closer to the goal we want to achieve. So I want to definitely commend him on at least taking some action, not anything at all.
Anyone else? I've got a tidbit that I thought was kind of fun. Taken a hobby magazine ever since I was in high school. It's called Coin World. And got it in the mail today. And the front page has an article about the National Coin Collection, which is housed at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., and which has just opened a new exhibit down there. This is in the National Museum of American History, and many of us probably have visited that museum and seen all the wonderful things down there. But what brought it to mind was that the article mentions that among those speaking before the ribbon cutting at the opening were the director of the museum and David Skorton, who was recently named the 13th Secretary of the Smithsonian Institution, Rosie Rios, the Treasurer of the United States, and the American Numismatic Association President. In his remarks, Skorton said that the American History Museum was different, stating, quote, "It's not a regular museum, it's a cool one," unquote. So I thought we'd all be interested in knowing that David Skorton, who we knew here as president of Cornell University, has moved on and is taking up his duties in Washington, D.C. Leslin.
Mike, I'm sorry. I had two other things, and I love the fact that former Cornell president is using words like cool. You know he's been in Ithaca for a while. Two really quick things. At our last legislature meeting, I did reach out to this community to support members of the black community here going to Cleveland for Black Lives convening. I want to say a great big thank you to the community and for any of you around the table who supported the adventure. It was very, very successful. We were able to take 40 or so people on the bus to Cleveland, Ohio, to participate in that event, our workshops, everything that they mentioned. We were turning people away because we just could not accommodate more. And I would be remiss if I do not mention that you're going to talk about me, that this past weekend I had the opportunity to be a driver of a group of young people who come from throughout Tompkins County, however they attend program at GIAC, who are part of a local track team, the GIAC Navigators. So I had the opportunity of driving them to Boston to represent our area in the Northeast region's biggest track meet, youth track meet in Needham, Massachusetts. And I'm very proud to say that, no, they did not place first, but they placed eighth out of 24 teams and were able to bring back a trophy to Tompkins County. You know, given that we only had 17 people in the track team and most of the other teams, you know, represented there had, you know, well over 50 athletes, I thought that was a very good showing, very good representation for us in Tompkins County. We go places and we do things and bring definitely bring name to Ithaca and to Tompkins County. So kudos to those young people who went there and ran their hearts out. I was having, you know, attacks and breathing attacks watching them run 1,500 meters and 3,000 miles. And I was falling out, but they did very well and represented well. Many first place trophies came home, and they brought back an overall team placement of eighth. So big shout out to them.
Absolutely. Mike Sigler.
I'll be quick. I hate following you because you always bring, like, good news.
I try. Unlike Joe, I try.
I just wanted to say I'll be very interested in Carol's proposal about the support for President Obama's plan because, you know, in it, there's so much support for nuclear power, so that should be interesting. And, you know, he's been such a supporter of natural gas over the past 6 years, it should be fascinating to see how this legislature supports this new energy roadmap that he has laid out. So I'm excited.
Thank you, Mike. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Dooley Kiefer brought up animals, and it made me think of what I did and Mike Lane did this weekend. This past weekend, we both did, in Groton, New York for Farm Day, Family Farm Day, at a man's farm named Dan Carey, who is also the chair of the Soil and Water Board. And he has a huge farm, a couple hundred cows he milks. It's a big-time family operation. All his sons are involved, his wife, his grandchildren. He's a really incredible guy. In fact, his great-grandfather was a Secretary of Agriculture under Harry Truman, and then he ended up as the Secretary of Ag in New York State at some point. And it was really, you know, I'll steal David Skorton's word, it was really cool to be out there hanging around with the cows and people who actually provide milk to everyone, and, you know, wherever they sell it. It was well organized. There were rides for families. And the the Kerry people themselves are just really wonderful, wonderful, hardworking farm people. And I was, I had my grandchildren with me from New York City, and they really, they thought it was cool too. You know, they were looking at cows and riding around on tractors and things like that. And it was a really incredible day. And I thank Dan Kerry and all his family for putting that on. And CCE was involved in it also. And the other, the Dairy Queen was there, and, you know, it was very cool.
Jim, I would certainly second that. It was in the weather and the day. Glenn, what a gorgeous setting there in Groton, and you have landscape second only to Dryden in its beauty. So, but we loved it out there. I know you would have been there if you hadn't been away.
And by the way, Dan's daughter was the Dairy Queen.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh. Martha.
Yeah, just quickly. I wonder how long the backlash, how long it will take for backlash from the regular museums about it's not like a regular one, but it's cool. So at least he's still got a sense of humor, but he might have to work on it a little bit.
I don't think there's a huge part of the population reading Coin World magazine. Never know.
Okay.
Peter Stein.
Oh, I just thought I'd join in. I was not planning to say anything, but I thought I'd join in with what I did last weekend. So last weekend, my wife and I went to Glimmerglass in Cooperstown, New York. We do that every year. And Glimmerglass is an interesting place, not very far from Ithaca. It's about 2 hours and 15 minutes driving. And there's the Baseball Hall of Fame is there, and another couple of other features. But what's really unique about it is that it has the most recently built opera house in the United States is there. And they have a group of people that started out in the high school showing performing operas, and have built that thing up so that it is now one of the best-known opera places outside of big cities. I don't think there's another one that is in such a small city and is valued so highly. New York Times does complete reviews of all of their productions. And their productions, we also go to the Metropolitan Opera in New York City. It's supposed to be the greatest opera house in the globe. But I must say, I can't tell the difference in quality. They do four operas every year. They have a season which is 2 months long, from the middle of July into the middle of August. Four operas that they do in repertory. And if you've never seen an opera, or you feel the need to see an opera, it's just a wonderful place to go. Very charming community. It's a, really as nice a weekend as I know. And the operas were superb, absolutely superb. So just thought I would pass that on to you.
Carol Chuck.
Yeah, I was going the same place as Martha with a reaction. How quickly we forget sometimes the cool museums that we have right here, that many of which, some at least one of which he used to represent, the Cornell Johnson Museum. If you have never been there, it has one of the world's premier collection of Asian art, particularly Southeast Asian art, premier in the world, as well as exhibits on fashion that have actually been done by Cornell students that have actually made it into the History Museum of the Smithsonian. You could see it here first, and with much fewer crowds and faster and easier. We have, I think, a museum trail of seven. Am I right? Seven museums: the Johnson, the Museum of the Earth, the Science Center, Cayuga Nature Center, Plantations, maybe on the list. Our own history.
You're talking about the trail, they put the library there.
And the library, yeah. The exhibits, I think, are in there. So I think there's at least seven, and they're very cool. And while they're a very different experience than the Smithsonian,
which I might have used a different word, awe-inspiring or something. Ours are really cool. So please go and take advantage and visit.
All right, anyone else? Okay, then let's move on. We don't have any topical presentations tonight. We'll do chair's report. What I wanted to report on was that I was very pleased at the invitation of our Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton to meet in a group of folks with our new Speaker of the New York State Assembly, Carl Hasty, and it's pronounced Hasty, I was told. And it was a nice meeting. We were able to talk about some things. He came up, said he was trying to tour upstate districts in order to become more familiar with the economy and the people and things that were going on up here. He spent the day in Ithaca visiting a number of places, including coming to Freeville and visiting Weaver Energy, which is a small factory that's in the process of developing wind generators for smaller usage, up to 5 kilowatts, that they've developed a special way of having the tail on them be able to move in real severe weather so that it protects the generator from being destroyed in a severe wind. They are an interesting place to visit. If you wanted to have a tour of their facility and see some of their generators, they'd probably be happy to have you come on out there. I had a chance to mention to Speaker Hasty about our concerns about mandates, particularly Medicaid, and how that was hurting us. I mentioned to him about my personal belief that we need reform in the New York State legislature. For example, the idea that's been out there recently that the outside income for legislators be restricted and that their salaries be increased. I think that would be, in my view, a smart thing to do, because it would mean that they would be less likely to be influenced in the way that the past speaker, Sheldon Silver, the past majority leader, Dean Scalise, and others have been recently charged in criminal actions by the United States attorney. So we talked about a few of those things. We got to meet his staff. There were about 6 with him. He told me a little bit about his district, which is located in the Bronx. He said up near Westchester County. He told me that he could go across his district in 10 minutes, compared to some of the districts we have in upstate, obviously. So it was a nice time. I thank our Assemblywoman for giving us an opportunity to have the speaker in Tompkins County and be able to have him learn a little bit about what we have here. I have some appointments. There is a revised appointment sheet in your red folder. We've added one. The chair's appointment tonight are to the Workforce Development Board. I'm going to try this one. Mohammed Ardal Rahim as the business representative, and Danetta Zimmerman. The others are going to be out of on the consent agenda. Moving right along, we go over to the reports by our staff. Let's turn to our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I think I got a signal from Leslin that I'm too gloomy in my report. So tonight I'll cut the gloomy stuff out, and that means I'll be very brief in my report tonight. I just have a couple of things. First, I think this is the first chance we've had to talk about the retreat The department had legislative retreat that was held to talk about the climate survey results and, most importantly, where we go from there. And I think we ought to feel pretty good about the way that retreat went. Participation by both legislators and department heads was excellent. I think we would all agree that Paula Younger did a great job in structuring the meeting that night to make sure we went from the very start of an understanding of what was in the survey to the end of what we should do about that. And also Leslin was very much involved not only in the organization of that, but also kind of bringing us to a place of closure at the end. So I think we should all feel very good about what we accomplished that night. And we also have something to monitor ourselves about, which is what do we do now? How do we move forward? How do we pivot from the survey to action to make ourselves a better organization? So I appreciate all that was done to bring us to that place. At your next meeting, I'll be bringing you a resolution to authorize a contract with the CSEA White Collar Unit, our largest union that has over 400 employees. I'll spare you the details of that agreement tonight. I think most of you are familiar with at least the core economic elements of the agreement. But I do want to give credit to those who participated in these long negotiations across the table. This was a difficult round of discussions, not because we had difficult people on both sides of the table, but because we're in kind of a period of transition. We've gone from an awful economy to an economy that's recovering. It's very hard to figure out where to take labor contracts in a period of transition that's still volatile but seems to be getting better. Expectations were pretty uncertain as we started the negotiations. But through a lot of good faith and careful thought by everybody who was involved in that process, I think we ended at a good place with an agreement that is fair, reasonable, and will move us forward. The negotiating teams, I just want to call out the members of those teams. On our negotiating team, two of you were involved in that. Peter and Jim were both members of the negotiating team. Frank Krupa was a department head representative. Steve Estes was involved from personnel. And even though negotiations were long, we shouldn't have involved three separate personnel commissioners, but we did, given the tenure of those commissioners. We started with Anita. We continued through Deb Prado, and we concluded with Amy Guerreri. So in terms of our negotiating team, very engaged and very productive. But on the other side of the table, we had an equally competent and dedicated group of folks on the CSEA negotiating team, starting with Doug Perrine, who's the president of that union, a DSS employee, Abby Bigsby from probation, Iretta Ellis from IT, Eric Ellison from Doer, and Sue Ralstead from mental health. Without people who had the best interests of the county in mind and who were willing to make good faith compromises to get to the end, these long negotiations probably would have still been ongoing. And instead, again, I think we have an agreement that all would find fair and reasonable and that we will bring to you for ratification authorization next week. The union did ratify it in a vote last week. It's a three-year agreement. So expect us to come forward with legislation next week. Amy Guerreri is back in the office right now drafting that that resolution. So that's my report. You know that we're deeply involved right now in the building of the 2016 budget. I'll have more to report on that at your next meeting, and then we will introduce the budget on September 1st. So I'll save more of that report until the next time. And I hope all would agree that this is the least gloomy report that I've made in some time, and that's out of appreciation for Leslin's constructive suggestion.
Questions for our county administrator? Kathy Lucerrera.
Thank you. I want to ask a somewhat convoluted question that I hope won't turn to gloom, but some of it is based on the summary of the budget audit that I read, and some news I heard offhand today. It has to do with the airport. There's apparently some rumors that the Senate or one of our governmental bodies is thinking about doing away with rules that prevent LaGuardia from some longer flights. That See, I knew somebody would know and help me out here. Here's the deal. Our airport may suffer if these rules are eliminated. And I wondered if anybody knows anything about that, because y'all know I'm always worried about the airport, especially given its current position and its how it would be in jeopardy if we lost a lot of flights to, let's say, LaGuardia. Now, can somebody here put that in context and analyze it for me? Because I think it's something that I should worry about.
I haven't seen it.
I know you don't want to be gloomy, but
no, I'm trying not to be gloomy.
Martha?
I haven't seen it. I will remind the legislature we don't fly into LaGuardia now. So I don't know if it's specific to LaGuardia or it will have a general impact on aviation that could affect us. Yeah. Martha's nodding.
Martha?
Yeah, it's something weird called the perimeter rule. And it means that, and they helped me out, because Mike saw an article also.
That was in the Times Union yesterday.
Okay. That LaGuardia is prohibited from having flights that go longer than... Was it 1,500
miles?
1,500 miles from their perimeter. I guess that's the name of the rule. Which means that they are forced to serve upstate New York. They're forced to serve smaller regional airports. I mean, I suppose Connecticut and Massachusetts, whatever, too. But importantly, upstate airports, not, I mean, obviously not us right now, but... you know, the throughway cities, et cetera. The if that rule were eliminated, which my understanding is the governor has proposed, then there's worry that they will try to compete for bigger jets, you know, that go to Detroit and California, and et cetera, and make more money that way, and therefore leaving upstate even further in the dark than we are now. So there was a letter, and Barbara Lifton signed on to it, and I think sort of putting us in the catchment with other upstate airports in this situation. So I'm curious about it being tied to the idea of rebuilding LaGuardia, which was the first part of the story a couple days earlier. So is it just, okay, we're going to put all this money and rebuild LaGuardia, then... maybe their goal is to make it like sort of Reagan Airport in Washington, sort of the downtown JFK, and to hell with the upstate cities. I don't know. Is that?
Apparently they can make more money off the long-haul flights if they can open up these slots that are held for the local traffic. And you're right, we're not doing that right now, but we have in the past flown in LaGuardia, and we may in the future. So it's important that we not lose that opportunity out of regional airports like ours. Mm-hmm. And, yes, there was the Times Union reported on a letter that several assembly people from upstate New York had signed, including our assemblywoman, Barbara Lifton, to the Port Authority in New York, asking that the... they not go ahead with the change that would eliminate this perimeter rule. Kathy?
Thank you. So now that y'all put this in context, I'm just curious, what, if anything, can we do? I mean, I'd love to hear, you know, the public calling the governor and saying, you know, don't cut us out of the loop. We've got a vibrant economy here, and a lot of it does depend on us having a vibrant airport that we can't afford to support with county tax dollars, but I was wondering about committees or any other such communications we could make.
Perhaps our Air Services Task Force could advise us on it as to perhaps we could pass a resolution or something to show our position on this that might be useful. Dan, maybe out of your committee?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll look into this.
Carol?
I'm trying to first understand this a little bit better. There are three major airports in the New York City area, of which LaGuardia is the most difficult to navigate and the hardest to get to from Midtown, you know, from the areas that people are normally going to when they go to the New York City area from here, or vice versa. it's over a $50 cab ride with no public transportation. From there, where you can get by public transportation to either JFK at Newark, you can now, the Newark Airport, which isn't even in New York State, you can get to the areas of New York City that people go to with a $2.75 path ride, as well as a train ride. So, and we have flights that go there. So I'm trying to understand whether there's something about this that, if this happened, does this just affect LaGuardia and LaGuardia flights in relation to us, or would this affect the ability of and funding for Tompkins County Airport and routes relative to these other two airports as well, which are better airports in my opinion anyway?
I've got Jim and then Martha.
Good questions, but I think Dan already said that he would look into it, and clearly we're not going to solve the problem here this evening, and especially since you can't get from Ithaca to LaGuardia unless you're on a bus, you know, so.
Martha?
Yeah, just briefly, it's not about the county taxpayer, you know, subsidizing the airport. It's about the structure of the industry that is moving to larger jets and away from the kinds of service to region, you know, to smaller cities. And if we, so right now, again, we don't go right to LaGuardia, we don't go right to New York City, but this is a matter, I think Barbara probably signed on as a matter of solidarity with Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, and other places in the upstate that look to be sacrificed if this happens.
Yeah, the problem is that if it happens at this airport, there are also shortage of slots at a lot of other airports, and will they sacrifice the less profitable upstate routes for those?
Thanks.
Thank you. Anything else for Joe? All right, let's move on to a report by the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Just wanted to let everybody know that we have a trial scheduled to start on August 17th. It's just a slip and fall case. The name of the case is Ryan. If we can settle it, we'll settle it. But it's just someone who fell. It's actually 8 years ago on ice and snow. And there's no particular principal involved. It's no real reason to think the county was negligent. But we haven't been able to settle it to date, so you may hear about it. I mean, there's no particularly interesting issue. It's just someone who fell on ice and snow and had some injury, but not a lot of injury. We could have an executive session, but there's really not a whole lot to say. I just wanted you to know in case you heard that there would be a trial.
What was the location?
It was the courthouse steps.
At the courthouse steps?
Yes. It was 8 years ago. And it was a snowy day.
Questions for Jonathan? Let's move to our Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
Tonight I'd like to present the December 31st, 2014 financial report. We already have taken this to the Audit Committee and to the Budget Committee. On your desk in front of you, you have a series of reports that are hard copies of things that I emailed you last week. There's about four different letters that look like this. We're not going to take a lot of time on the letters, but there's various reports, letters, and communications from the auditors. The last two documents are these gray-bound documents, which consist of the executive summary from the auditors, basically gives you highlights of the audit. I'll refer to some of those tonight. And the larger booklet, of course, is the actual financial report. This financial report is about 6 weeks earlier than we presented last year, so we were pretty proud of the undertaking and hope to bring you a report even earlier next year if possible. We've supplied a copy of the report as required to the legislative clerk. I've emailed copies to the legislators and to the county administrator. I believe it was Wednesday of last week. And as I mentioned before, the audit committee, which is a subset of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, have met as required to receive the report from the auditors, and they heard the formal presentation. After that meeting, we went into the format of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, who heard an abbreviated version of the report as given from the auditors. And tonight, before you, later on, I believe it's Resolution I, you have the opportunity to formally accept the financial statements, and that will be later on tonight under the Budget Committee with Jim Dennis. I'd like to point out that the executive summary is probably the best place to pull highlights if you want a quick read of the report. The other thing I recommend is in the annual report itself, there's a section called Management's Discussion and Analysis, which we lovingly call the MD&A. These are notes that I have made throughout the year and compile them at the end of the year to try to give you the most important data. And the last thing that I gave to you on the very top was a copy of my remarks from tonight, so you can follow along with some of the facts and figures. It's a short three-page analysis so that we don't have to plow through all six or seven documents. Under highlights of the financial report, I'd like to comment that from page one of the audited financial report, it says that we received an unmodified opinion. This is the best opinion that a county can get. It's on the basic financial statements. It's also an opinion on the schedule of expenditures of federal awards, which are the federal grants that we receive. That requires a separate audit. My second point is that there's another letter. I just call it the internal control letter. I won't bother to read the three lines that it takes to call the name of the letter. But in the control letter, basically at the end of the financial report, it will say to you that no material instances of noncompliance and no material internal control weaknesses were found at the financial statement level. This, again, is the highest level of this type of response to the internal control letter. So we've achieved very high grades on both of the required letters that the auditors have to present. My third point is that there were numerous federal award programs with expenditures that amounted to almost $34 million. We comment on that because these are the types of programs that were required to go through the single audit. You've heard that mentioned from time to time. You've heard that the costs of doing the single audit for the county continually go up. The single audit, which is required, is based on the volume of federal and state grants that we get. So as we continue to receive these types of grants and expenditures, it requires a bit more time of the auditors to test these major programs. Now we get into the fun stuff, Joe isn't playing gloomy in the last couple of weeks. We brought a fairly upbeat report for you tonight to show you that not all things are doom and gloom. There are a few negative things that we will comment on, but I thought I'd start with number four, the undesignated or unassigned fund balance in the general fund. The unassigned fund balance has gone up $4,440,000 from last year. If you look at the increase last year to the previous year, it also went up, but it went up $1.4 million. The $4.4 million increase is indeed very good, since our 2014 budget envisioned using up to $687,000 of unassigned fund balance. So instead of using that money, we increased the fund balance by $4.4 million. As a percentage of general fund revenues, the undesignated or unassigned fund balance is now at 15.3%. And that compares to 13.2% of last year at this time. The second page of my remarks, if you wanted to look at just the operating results, and that's just usually comparing revenues and expenditures, we'll look first at the general fund for 2014. The revenues are listed there at $156,702,779. The expenditures, though, were considerably less, $150,778,298. That shows us that our revenue over expenditures figure came in at $5.9 million. And if you'd like to compare that to our activity, our operations for the previous year, which was 2013, revenues were roughly $147 million, and expenditures were a little bit higher, $147.8. So last year at this time, we had to report that revenues were under expenditures to the tune of $313,000. So there was a bit of a deficit last year when we closed 2013 books. So we're looking at a deficit in the previous year of $313,000 compared to a net profit or gain of $5.9 million in 2014. The next point is about the transportation fund. I should give this to Joe to read. This is really the only segment of our operations as of right now that really could use some improvement, and that's because of the protracted losses that we've shown at the airport over the last few years. I have to report that at the end of 2014, we have a deficit unassigned fund balance of $338,000. The net operating loss for the year, which is revenues over or under expenditures, the net operating loss for the year for the airport was $208,768. I've shown what the auditors have drawn for me, a quick comparison, just so that we can show you not just the highlights of this year or even last year, but I've showed you the last 5 years, and you can see the numbers there yourselves, revenues compared to expenditures from 2010, 11, 12, right up through 2014. And in each year, there is a net loss for the airport. I thought you should be aware of this and you should see this. It's a significant component that we have to address now before our auditors and before the state, because now we're into a negative fund balance situation with the airport. And for as long as we have that negative fund balance situation, we actually have to assign part of the general fund reserve to cover whatever negative fund balance that the airport might be carrying. So that shows up for the first time in our financial statements this year, that we've actually had to assign a small part of our general fund balance to cover the negative fund balance in the airport. The airport still relies on borrowings from other funds, mostly the general fund, to maintain cash stability. Management believes that the airport will be successful in negotiating more favorable fees and airfares with the provider airlines. Also, a more extensive marketing campaign has begun at the airport. The deficit fund balance will decrease as monies are paid back to the other funds and air traffic picks up in subsequent years. The next section is on the countywide financial statements. So far, we've concentrated on the general fund, the airport fund. These are the ones that where questions come up frequently. There's another section in the very beginning of the financial report. We call them the GASB 34 statements or the roll-up statements or the comprehensive statements. Really, they're not used that much for governmental financial statement users because we like to use the fund financial statements. When we're putting our budget together, we're looking at the general fund. When we're working with the road or the machinery fund, we're looking at those funds particularly. If we're looking at the solid waste function here for the county, we're looking at that particular fund. So very rarely do we ever roll up everything, at least for operating purposes, into this comprehensive fund. But because it's required, it does take priority, and it is the first set of statements that you actually get to you when you get into the financial report. So I thought I'd give you some statistics on the countywide operation. The county's total revenues, all funds, increased by 6.15%, while the total cost or expenses of all programs and services increased by 2.17%. And if you want to see detail on those particular revenues and expenditures, you can see Figure 2, Changes in Net Position, on page 3D of the financial report. For comparison, the county's total revenues decreased by 0.6% in the previous fiscal year, 2013. So we see a over 6% increase in 2014 compared to about a 0.5% decrease in 2013. The expenditures, on the other hand, the cost of programs increased by 1.33% in 2013. So when you're looking at the expenditures year to year, you'll see a little over 2% increase for 2014 compared to 1.3% for 2013. The county invested nearly $12.8 million in capital assets during fiscal year 2014. Approximately $5 million of the capital assets was invested in infrastructure. For comparison's sake, the county invested nearly $10.6 million in capital assets during the previous year, 2013, and of that amount, $4.4 million went to infrastructure. And then because we frequently bring to you great news about our most recent debt offerings or debt issuances, which we just completed one in the last 60 days, I always try to bring a report to you to show you what our constitutional debt limit is and how well we're doing within that. At December 31, 2014, the county's total debt and obligations and other long-term liabilities amounted to $130,219,998. Now, that includes a lot of other liabilities other than just the notes and the bonds. The notes and the bonds are only about a third of that. The other long-term obligations are those OPEB costs, those post-employment benefit costs that we have to now report. It also includes long-term absences, compensated absences that we'll eventually have to pay out to employees, host of other liabilities that you don't normally think of until you get to financial report time. But that does give you the total amount of all debt and long-term liabilities, $53,394,500 is subject to the constitutional debt limit. Those are basically our bonds and our notes. And of that amount, that $53 million, that represents 12.05% of the county's statutory debt limit. So if you're ever wondering where are we at on how much we can borrow, we're only at a little over 12%. For comparison, at December 31, 2013, $45,745,000 was subject to the constitutional debt limit and represented approximately 10% of the county statutory debt limit. So we've gone up in a small amount from 10% to about 12% in our debt limit. And if you have any other questions or concerns about our debt, there's quite a few different reports and notes in the financial statements. There is a section called debt administration on pages 3I and 3J in the financial report, and there's also quite a few notes later on in the document that focus on each of the different types of bonds, notes, and long-term debt. So those are the highlights of the year. Most of it's very good. I'd like to thank the staff that have work so hard and taken a lot of time to put these reports together. They work incredibly well with the auditors, and the auditors have helped us to turn this around, like I said, about 6 weeks earlier than we had performed last year. So I give them kudos. Very appreciative of hardworking staff that helped to make this available for you tonight.
Thank you, Rick. And we know that your department has had its problems with staffing in there because of illnesses and other things. So that makes it all the more sweet that you're able to do this. Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I have my checkbook here. Can I just hand it? Would you take? I mean, this is amazing. Aside from the airport, sort of in English, what are some of the big movers that change instead of you were budgeting to go down in where it is in the reserves and it went up by $4.4 million. you know, this is really terrific in general of our overall position. So is it, I mean, we were expecting pension costs, for example, to go down.
That's one of them. We always budget fairly high on the pension end, and frequently come in way under budget on pension costs. The two biggest drivers, since it was the revenues that really outperformed anything, were sales tax for last year. Not too good this year, but last year, record banner year, and real estate taxes. Those were really two big ones. I can come up with about, there's about six or eight revenues, and I would be glad to email them to you on which ones really added up to come to that robust figure on why we've had. So I would be very, I might even have it here with me tonight, but I do know Joe and I had sat down and talked about these same elements a number of times, so I can just dust off that email. I'll send you the eight revenues that really went up markedly. But the two biggest drivers were sales tax and the real estate tax.
So it wasn't, say, mandate costs went down. It was more revenues.
Some of that is true, yes. You know more about the mandate expenditures compared to revenues?
Some of the good news on the expenditure side is in the mandates. So if you look at the source of where expenses were less than expected, a lot of it you're going to find in the DSS side. And so that we're going to bring that forward into 2016. There's also savings on the health side. That's the one that we're looking at to make sure we understand that. But it looks like in the public health area, there was also an underspend in public health. Can't quite get my arms around that one yet, so we're going to continue to look at that. But there is good news within the mandates.
Great. Thank you very much.
Carol.
Yeah, in general, thanks so much to you and your staff and your predecessor, David Squires, and staff for putting us, I think, you know, our county in the position of having really clean books, knowing where we stand, you know, the decisions that we make about what to spend money on, the help that you give in making sure that we're spending it properly and that we know what our various balances are, it's really indispensable. So thank you. I would point out that, you know, some of the savings have to do with not anything to do with your accounting, but the fact that unmet needs, you know, the needs that our county has that we decide not to meet, help put us in a better financial position, and that's always a painful fact of life. I was curious about the highway. One of the reports talked about compliance with highway law, section 10-C4. Is there, I assume there's some reason that we decide to account in our own way rather than the way they're talking about here? What is that?
It's a recurring comment. The auditors have best passed their comment explanation on to the audit committee this past week. I've heard it 2 years in a row now. I've come to find out that it's been a comment we've gotten for probably 7 or 8 years, maybe even longer. But it's kind of a stock comment that they have to report. And basically what it has to do with, it's state money that comes to us, to the highway department. It's like CHIPS funds, or it's like different types of programs. And because they require a certain bidding regulation for projects, for amounts of grants that are over $100,000, but when they give us the money, it comes in two different pools, or it comes from two different New York State pools. And they don't tell us what pool it's coming from until after we get it, until after we've spent it. And all the money that we get for that type of servicing of roads goes through our highway department, and we do all the work ourselves. Most of the work is done for road upkeep and the asphalt and the patching and all that, from what I understand, is done by all our own crews, or it's done by some contracted crews, but it comes from out of the D fund or our road fund. So we're receiving this money each year, and we spend the money. What happens, because we don't contract it out to a separate vendor, because it's over $100,000 and go through that process, We get that comment written up to us each year. But we really don't know that we're getting funds from that pool until after we've gotten the money and we've spent it. So the auditors would like not to write it. I'd like not to get it. There's really not a response that we can even come up with. So until New York State changes its that particular audit rule or that audit requirement, I'm afraid we're going to continue to get that one comment. And you picked the one comment that
we
got.
I know. Well, I just was concerned about whether there's a way, for next time, whether we can create, if it's a simple way that we can create an account that's a temporary spot to hold money.
I've talked to Jeff Smith about it.
So there's no chance of jeopardizing our state funding for highways.
I really don't think there's much of a chance of being jeopardized for continuing to receive funding.
Okay. And then the other comment that I had, I had it on my computer, but there was no way in the program I was using to mark the page, and I can't find it now. I think that one of the reasons that we come out in the shape that we do in terms of total fund balance at the year end and the changes has to do with the differences in the ways or the amount, the increased amount of money that we're putting into the capital fund. So it's sitting there so that we can do something with it. And if you could point out for me, it doesn't have to be now, where it was that I found that, maybe page 3G, where we've ended up with a much bigger, it's a dollar change between 2013 and 2014 of money in the capital fund sitting there waiting.
Yeah, that's a result of bond issues. When we get a bond issue and we receive all this money up front, it kind of sits there and it inflates the amount of our, it kind of inflates the amount of money that we have at any point in time. And then when we start spending the money and it goes, gets spent down, then of course it comes back down to more nominal levels. But you can see that fluctuate wildly as a capital projects fund balance will go up in response to when you did your last bond issue. So we happen to have a lot of money in the bank due to the last bond issue.
Right. Well, I just wish there were a way that we could do that similar, something similar for the people part of our operations as well. You know that I always comment on that. But thank you very much for these answers and for the work.
Jim Dennis.
Hey, Nate. thank you, Rick. I think for all of us on the legislature, the most important page to me is on the inside of the executive summary, page 1, where it says, independent auditors report no material instances of noncompliance and no material internal control weaknesses. And then the next paragraph down, the report on compliance of requirements for each major program that we're involved in. Again, no material instances of noncompliance and no material internal control weaknesses. So that tells me that the people who are handling our money know what they're doing and have for some time. We end the year with an over 10% fund balance, which is something we were trying to do. And the auditors, and Mike sat in the other day in the committee meeting, thank you, Mike, and I've done it for many years, and they talked to us about much of the same things, and over time from 08, 09, our financial picture has changed to the good, and after even the crash in 08, when we really had to, shuck and jive to get things working correctly. And county administrator, the director of finance, all the people involved in this, department heads, have helped together to make these kind of reports come out like they do. So thank you, Rick and Joe and all the other people involved in this.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
I'll pass. Thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
So
Joe mentioned earlier that there's been a settlement with one of our unions, and this financial statement suggests that we will be able to pay whatever we've negotiated because we have sufficient funds somewhere. Is that a correct conclusion?
Well, we wouldn't pay it out of that. So we, in the budget every year, we set aside an amount that we think will be necessary to settle labor contracts. So actually, if you look at the budget.
I'm not looking at the budget. I'm looking at this. And I'm wondering which of the many lines in here would reflect the money that's been set aside for that.
Well, there is a reserve in here for retroactive wage settlements. So in the case of CSEA, the only retroactivity occurs within this year. So there's money in the 2015 budget that will cover that. There is the Road Patrol Union is certainly out of contract, has been since 2010. So there is a reserve account that's set up right there on page 45.
Thank you. I just didn't get that.
That's there to cover the retros prior to 2015.
The other question I have is on page 3I, figure 9, capital assets net of depreciation. And 2013 is headed as restated, and I wasn't sure what that referred to. Was that?
There were some fixed assets, like when we compare our subsidiary for fixed assets, which is a whole list of them, compared to what we have on our general ledger line items like this, and they must equal. It's just a group of numbers compared to the whole list of assets. From one year to the next, we found that there were some items that were still supposed to be on. They had to do with some TCAP buses, but they were assets that were erroneously removed before, so they were added back on. And they're so immaterial that it hardly even shows up, but we have to show that whenever we adjust the beginning balance for an asset that was added back on, if it was taken off prematurely.
Sometime within the last decade, we had to start showing depreciation, which we hadn't shown before. What year was that? Do you remember?
I'm not sure when you implemented GASB 34 here. It was different for different counties, cities, and states. I've been dealing with it since, I want to say around 2001 or somewhere around there. It may have even been before that, but it's been around for at least a decade.
Thank you.
Leslie, we're back to Gatsby.
I keep hearing it.
Anyone else? Rick, thank you for that thorough report, and we appreciate it.
Mike, if I may, there was only an answer to one of the questions on which revenues had gone up and which ones had gone down. If you turn to page 3 of the executive summary, the little book, it shows, even though it doesn't detail all the revenues by name, it does show the major classifications for the general fund revenues over a five-year period. I really like this table, and I come to use it a lot during the course of the year for a variety of things. But if you compare the left-hand column 2014 to the year before, you can go right down comparing those 2 years and see where the big increases were. For example, if you get down to the last two lines under revenue, state sources and federal sources, you can see where those both went up. And those are our state grants and federal grants. State sources going up about $3 million, and federal sources going up not a lot, but about $800,000. The top two lines show real property taxes going up, and that's very significant. And the third line down is the one that includes sales tax. You can see that non-property tax items coming in going from $51.3 million to $54 million. So that includes a very substantial sales tax increase. And likewise, you can compare. A lot of them have gone down, but most of them have gone up, and you can see the big drivers there.
Martha?
I'm glad to see this, not to drag this out any longer, but that list that you said you would email us would be helpful so that I know, for example, state sources, that's a big increase. Is that because reimbursement formulas went up? Is it because our staff was really, really great at getting grants? I mean, you know, I'd be interested to know more qualitatively what these numbers kind of represent. So I really appreciate. And in terms of property taxes, is that a growth in the tax base or like new properties?
Well, it's both.
Okay.
It includes both any increase that you have voted in year after year in the millage, and it would also include the increase in assessments.
Okay. All right. Is there a way to separate that out?
I don't know that we can. I think that item, though, is probably it's the amount that we actually collected. So what if it's really what you levied less what was uncollected is this number. So I'm not sure that you'd be able to break out those two effects.
All right. Thank you very much.
Shall we move on? We don't have any report from other county staff that I'm aware of. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Let's move to the consent agenda. We have some appointments on consent. For the government operations, out of the Government Operations Committee to the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium Board of Directors, Amy Guerreri and Brooke Jobin. From Public Safety Committee to the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Malik Snyder McGee. Then we have resolutions. If anybody wants to discuss them, please just say off. Resolution A. Authorizing of a Federal Aviation Administration grant for aircraft rescue firefighting vehicle, protective gear, and fire equipment, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5746. Resolution B, acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant for runway 14-32 rehabilitation, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5747. Resolution C, authorizing a supplemental agreement number 14 with CNS Engineers, Inc. for GA apron rehabilitation, design, and bidding services at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 5739. Resolution D, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number 13 with CNS Engineers, Inc. for runway 14-32 rehabilitation, construction, observation, and administration services at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5738. Resolution E, award of contract, Terminal Cafe, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 5737.
Can I just take that one off?
That's off, okay. Resolution F, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings and assessment rolls, ID 5726. Resolution G, establishing county equalization rates. That's ID 5727. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? By Leslin and Bean Claiborne, seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Any discussion? All those in favor of the consent agenda, please say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. All right, we'll go to...
Mike, I think Megan is waiting for H. Under P.
Well, we move to take that committee first. You want to do Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee? Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Let me just move the resolution.
Okay. We'll come back to your report.
Resolution H, authorization to enter into an agreement with the City of Ithaca and Cornell University to administer the Community Housing Development Fund. And I move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion. Carol Chock.
Oh, I just need to ask the county attorney what I should do with this year. In the past, as you all know, my husband is director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. In the past, I voted along with the others to establish this fund because it isn't any direct money, and in particular, when it was just INHS, most of the funding for projects that INHS built came out of the city portion. INHS has now merged with Better Housing, so they're sort of jointly applicants, and my husband is now executive director of both organizations. Again, his salary is not determined by the grants they receive, only the amount of work and the amount of time away from home to set salary, not like a private developer whose earnings depend on the project profits. And because this was not a direct application to the fund, but because of, you know, the increased scrutiny we've had and look at the county ethics policy, I just don't know if I'm comfortable. The majority of the projects, I think, of the funds that have gone to this over the years have gone to projects that one of those two organizations are involved with, although not all of them. So I don't know. What should I do? Maybe more comfortable recusing myself unless you say I shouldn't.
I can say I do not see any conflict.
Anybody else have any thoughts for me?
If you feel comfortable, don't recuse yourself.
I think the attorney has spoken.
Peter, can I ask?
Well, I didn't really follow what you were saying, but I think the general rule is if it would have been a conflict for your husband, it should also be a conflict for you. That's how I've always interpreted that.
We have a ruling from the county attorney at this point. Martha Robertson?
I think if there's a sense of, if there's an appearance or somebody could imagine there would be an appearance of a conflict, it's certainly prudent and not... I'm sure this isn't going to hinge on.
Are you asking to abstain?
Yeah, so I think I would like to abstain. There is
I'll
no conflict, but I can understand
for
where somebody in the public would think that there was an appearance of a conflict, so I will abstain.
Yeah, just to clarify, I have no problem with Carol abstaining or asking to abstain. I'm just saying I do not see a conflict because there's no direct money going to them. It's just establishing the program, basically. But I think to avoid an appearance, if Carol feels more comfortable, that's fine.
So, ready to vote on this resolution? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? And those abstaining? We have one abstention. That passes.
I'm sorry that Megan didn't get a chance to tell you what a good thing this is. But it's all in our agenda packet.
Thank you, Megan, for coming, and we agree. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee then. David McKenna is our chair.
The F&I has not met since our last meeting, so I have no report.
David, is there any update or news on the reconstruction in Danby and Newfield?
There's no news on any financial assistance that I've heard to date. I will say that Newfield had a $770,000 loss due to that storm. That's the only information that I have at this current time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Let's go to Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is our chair.
Thank you, Mike. We met yesterday, the committee, and two actions. One was to accept the 2016 tourism program budget. Some slight changes, and that doesn't come here. It goes to Joe and becomes part of the overall budget. But just a couple of quick highlights. They were modifying the budget. Includes reducing their projection of growth from 5% to 4% for 2015. So current year, slight dip, but then they expect growth in 2016 because new hotels will be opening. So they're projecting 6% growth for 2016. So that's good news. The first quarter of 2015 was definitely slower than expected. I think more snow than we expected. The the clever website, get, you know, sending people to Florida instead of here, I think will pay off, but didn't show up in February. So they are looking for a strong spring and summer. One of the big items for 2016 is that they're planning to redo the what's called the Chamora study. That's the consultant that did a visitor profile. And I think in 2009, they're going to redo that in 2016 to give us some better numbers. I mean, 2009 was an outlier, and so 2016 will be an important year for them to redo that study. And then the committee did a passed resolution on refinancing Ithaca College debt. That'll come to the legislature next meeting. We did, yesterday was just another part of the report, a nice event at the Rev, the downtown incubator, with Senator Gillibrand and Erskine. What's his name? It's in the paper. The Commerce Department, Federal Commerce Department's Economic Development Administration, they had given the Southern Tier a $500,000 grant for supporting product-based businesses in the Southern Tier. And so it was a great chance to talk to federal officials, and they had a lot of the business startup people right there. I had a chance to plug how important the airport is for economic development, as well as attention to family leave, and thanking the senator for her leadership on family leave and child care issues that affect women entrepreneurs still, unfortunately, more than men, but a family leave policies that help entrepreneurs. So that, I think, is the gist of the meeting. And then we actually changed our September meeting to the 14th because of Labor Day. So it's September 14th and I think 4:30, just before, either after or before facilities. Probably after facilities is the same meeting day. So.
Questions for Martha? Thank you, Martha. Go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. So we had one resolution pulled from consent, Resolution E. I'd like to move award of contract Terminal Cafe, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion. Carol, you pulled that?
I just was curious. No city or location was listed for this contract, and I'm curious about first whether there were any local. For most of what we do at the airport, needs to be these big contractors, who most of whom are not local. The cafe running the food operation, I thought, might be an opportunity to showcase our local foods. So were any of the applicants or proposals received from local food vendors, and the one that was selected, where are they from?
So the one that was selected currently operates the cafe at the Elmira Airport, so if you consider that local. I don't know where they actually live. There was at least one proposal that was local, and it was rejected for reason they felt like the business wasn't at the capacity that could handle what was envisioned to happen at the airport.
Do we know anything about the volume of people who actually eat at the airport?
I don't know anything about that volume. So this was evaluated by the airport manager, and he has that information.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And I have
anything else, Dan?
I do. I have a little report. So we met on July 28th. A couple more things from the airport that you might find interesting. So this new restaurant that we just voted on, they're going to be developing an app so that you can order your meals ahead of time and have them waiting for you when you get to the airport. And then they're also working on a process where you can already be in the waiting area, having gone through security already, and order food and have it pass through security somehow so that you don't have to leave the security area and come back in. And, you know, some of these things are kind of small, but I give my call a lot of credit, our airport manager. This is not most of what he does, but these are the kinds of things that airport customers will see and maybe improve their experience and maybe drive up usage at some point. One more thing about the airport is another thing that we voted on tonight was a couple of resolutions regarding the runway rehabilitation. So this is something that's going to happen next year, and it's going to require most likely the airport to be closed for 10 days next summer. So you can imagine that's a pretty big deal. There are a lot of logistics to work out about that. We're going to hear more about that as it gets closer. I don't really have more information about that right now, but we'll hear about it some more. We also had a nice, lively discussion about drones. People seem very interested in this topic. The result is that we decided to ask our county attorney to help us craft some legislation that we can look at and discuss further to see if it is something that we want to have happen in Tompkins County. And in the meantime, we were contacted by, I need to read this one, by Lawrence Brinker, Executive Director and General Counsel of the NUAIR Alliance, which manages the congressionally mandated FAA-approved unmanned aerial systems test site for New York. So basically, Congress set up, I think it's 5 or 6 test sites around the country. One of them is in Syracuse. This guy read the article in the Ithaca Journal, contacted us that afternoon, and he's coming to the next Government Operations Committee, which is August 25th. He's going to be there. He's going to do a short presentation. He's going to take questions from anybody that wants to ask questions, and I will give you more information and details about that as it gets closer. And that is my report.
Thank you, Dan. Questions for Dan? Okay, let's move to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
I don't really have a report. The meeting time is still somewhat up in the air, and the committee will be informed when we figure that out.
Questions for Dooley? Carol?
I just wanted to talk a little bit more about President Obama's clean energy plan, clean power plan, and whether we might refer that matter to the committee to come back, get a sense of the body here that we'd like the committee to look into it. Mike Sigler is exactly right that it doesn't go far enough, and I know that I'm the first one who will come to you and tell you all the ways in which it doesn't go far enough. However, if this country doesn't make a start, it doesn't acknowledge that there's an issue, this is one of those cases Martha likes to point out, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This is one of those cases where I think we ought to consider joining the voices that say, yes, at the local level, we think we're seeing the impacts. We're spending more money every year because we're not dealing with climate change, and adding our voices because it's going to be hard enough to pass anything at the federal level. So to have bipartisan support from us saying, yes, it's not perfect, and it could be not perfect from any direction you'd like to make it not perfect, that we hope that we'll do something. So if there's a way to refer this to the committee to look at whether there's something we might do and what other municipalities are doing and what time frame we would need to do it under in order to be among the voices weighing in, I'd appreciate it.
Perhaps you and Dooley can discuss that.
It can certainly be a topic for discussion on the agenda if that's what you'd like. If there's something more concrete you have in mind, you'll have to let me know more.
Well, I guess I was looking maybe for a sense of this body as to whether, if we brought it back, something even at this level would be too controversial for us to take up and try to pass, and whether we'd like the Planning Committee to come back with something.
Jim Dennis.
Carol, I believe this has all the earmarks of a member-filed resolution. I think if you really want someone to do something and get a sense of the body, you should compose one, put it on next month's agenda, and see where it goes.
I can handle it that way, but it sounds like we can take it up in committee.
All right. Thank you. Dooley, anything else?
No.
Charter Review Committee will meet tomorrow at 3 o'clock here in Chambers, and we'll be taking up all the excitement of Article 27, which is other county administrative units, Article 30, which is intergovernmental relationships, and Article 31, which are various general provisions of the Charter. I'm going to call the break now for 10 minutes, and we'll come back and finish the agenda. Come back a little before, let's say, 20 of. Let's take our seats, everyone. Get started again. We're going to move to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair. Jim?
Hi, yes, thank you. Let me begin with Resolution I, which is the acceptance of the audited financial report for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2014, and I would move that gladly.
Seconded by Mike Sigler. Discussion?
I think the discussion has already been held. Rick was here and did a really thorough discussion of the audit and did a great job of this three-pager, and there are no questions as far as I'm concerned.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Joe talked about the labor contracts, and we are still at the table with our one final unit, the road patrol, and, you know, the best thing I can tell you is stay tuned, and we will let you know how those things all happen and roll out. There was a discussion about an EAP program that the HR, that personnel is getting involved in, and which is the Employee Assistance Program. It's supposed to be a newer and better version of an EAP program, and I think their contract runs out with the old providers at the end of August, and a new EAP program will be rolled out to the employees, and they will learn the ins and outs of operating the program. Amy was here to talk about that. So, other than that, come September 1st, Joe presents his budget, and I think we have a meeting scheduled at the end of August prior to county administrator's budget. And for me, that's all I have today.
The old library committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We don't have a committee meeting scheduled. It will be scheduled as needed. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Shinagawa.
I have a question on that one.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, one of the points that came up for discussion that was referred back to committee on that had to do with wording that would make clear or clearer than it is now at what point a sale of the property would occur and the conditions that would have to be met before the actual sale took place. I understand that it would be in all the county contracts, but there's some precedent for
yes,
putting it.
And so all of that,
is that anything that...
Plus the request to the county administrator to and the county attorney to give us recommendations would come to the next meeting of the old library committee. We've held off, frankly, scheduling it, waiting for to see what happens tonight.
Well, wouldn't that be relevant to... whether procedural is even correct to be bringing it up again tonight since we referred it to committee?
Well, we have a member filed resolution and we have...
Yeah, I understand.
It is the next
Thank
meeting
you.
After we voted on three resolutions. All right, let's move to Public Safety Committee. Nathan Shinagawa is the chair.
First off, let me apologize for being late. I am
I was in Maryland for the past 2 days dealing with a family emergency, and I just drove back, so I'm a little spaced out.
Take your time.
Anyway, the old library, the Public Safety Committee, I believe we met. We've had a meeting. Yeah, we haven't had a meeting since the last time I reported, so we'll be having a meeting shortly, and then I'll report next time.
Okay, Nathan, I think you have a resolution, yes. Resolution J.
Yeah, Resolution J, which is the appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay reimbursement, sheriff's office, law enforcement.
Is there a second? Second by Martha Robertson. This is short form roll call. Ready to vote? Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Does anyone want to be recorded as a no on that? That's unanimous. Thank you. I'll go next to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. That's Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
Mr. Chair, I have no report. Just want to echo Joe's sentiments in thanking all of the legislators and department heads who came to the retreat and for your active participation and contribution. We'll be moving forward. We have a meeting that's to be scheduled soon, either 18th, 19th, or 20th, a small group meeting to talk about the next steps that came out of that retreat.
Leslie, and let me just say that we really appreciate your shepherding this, 2 years in the making, and now we're getting to the point of talking about real actions.
I'm going to give the shepherding staff to Paula Younger. I'm somewhere hovering.
Okay. let's move to any questions for Leslie at this point. Let's move to Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Hi, yes. The committee hasn't met since its last meeting, but it will meet on Thursday at 3:30. So I have no particular report.
Questions? Don't see any. We'll move next to individual member filed resolutions. We have Resolution K, designating a preferred developer, Tompkins County Old Library property, submitted by legislator Herrera. Kathy, do you want to move that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Resolution K. What he said, designating preferred developer, Tompkins County Old Library property.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. You can start.
Yeah, I want to talk about this for just a minute. Y'all know I missed meetings where this was discussed, and I take responsibility in part for the drawn-out process this has been. I do want to say that I think it's been a great process. Public support for something is always great to see, no matter what you think of the various parts and pieces of it. Public discourse is what we're about. I brought this forward in this way because I've been pretty outspoken all along that at the time that I brought it up, I felt that leasing wasn't really an appropriate thing for the county to be doing with its property. So as y'all noticed at the last meeting, I voted against all the resolutions that had reference to leasing it, even though for those of y'all that are going to remind me, yes, it is allowed and it is spoken about in the RFP. I just felt that it was emphasizing it too much to add those whereases, and I wanted them taken out. In addition, as many of y'all will remember, I'm somebody that was on the old library committee. I still am. And when we discussed it, it needed to come out of committee, and I felt strongly about that because I know, as I think everybody in this room and a lot of other people in the community know, that it's something that a lot of people had an interest in. And to me, it made sense to bring it onto the bigger floor for discussion and for, frankly, finding out more about it. As this has gone on, I'm somebody that often says, you know, this wasn't that hard a decision about some of the things, because a lot of times my ideals and principles seem pretty obvious on one side and seem pretty absent on the other. That wasn't the case with this one. It's pretty good division in the sense that I would have liked to combine both of the actually all three of the proposals we had to get what all I wanted out of it. I've said this before to y'all, but I need to say it publicly because I've been hearing from constituents and members of the public that they don't know why I do what I do. Well, the fact is, I haven't, or hadn't, I should say, made up my mind for sure because both proposals have qualities that I like. I went ahead and did it this way, favoring the Travis Hyde development, because after wrestling with this, I decided, and I have to say I decided because I know I'm an elected representative, I'm not the smartest person in the room, and I'm not somebody that has a vested interest in any way, financially, through a friendship network, through business, in any way with either of these two projects. Yes, I'm interested in union labor. I would love to see union labor on any job. In fact, I have voted against some proposals when I was on the IDA because I felt at that time the IDA was specifically about jobs, and I felt that those jobs weren't ensuring local jobs. Yes, I'm in favor of understanding the power of sequestered energy, and I believe that a lot of times rebuilding is the most sensible option. There's a lot to tangle with here. And I want to say thank you to everybody that did their best to educate me about this. And the passion that people showed to me is commendable. It's part of the reason I love living here and part of the reason that I proudly call this home. Yes, just like I said when, you know, Obama started talking about race. Yes, it's messy. Yes, it's difficult. But that's what we like because it's authentic and it's real. I support the Travis Hyde proposal, and I brought it forward as a member filed with the lease wording taken out tonight because I decided this is the best proposal for my community, my county, my city, and for the economy. Now, I could go on and on about this. I have a feeling there's going to be more discussion, and if there's an opportunity to discuss it more, I will, but the way I'll summarize it is this. I'll quote Barbara Mink. When I was first running and she wasn't going to run anymore, I kept trying to ask her what her philosophy was. And I know some of y'all have heard this before, but it really struck me about how do you do it when there's an inherent conflict of interests between the city interests, your residents, and the county interest? And she said, no such thing. And I was like, no, wait, you don't understand. And I tried re-saying it, and y'all know she's a journalist, so of course, you know, she's not susceptible to being baited that way. But I did try to get her to explain to me, how do you decide? And what she actually got across to me and that has become clear to me in the years since, being a legislator and taking sides sometimes where I made my union friends mad, sometimes where I made folks in the development community mad, sometimes folks in the business community saw me as an enemy, sometimes people in the financial community didn't think I was making good decisions. And yet, usually there's somebody on the other side of it that can come up and say to you, I'm glad you had the guts to stand up for that. Well, this doesn't take a lot of guts. It's actually been difficult because I know people care so much about this. I'm proud, though, to say that this is a decision with my passion, with my spirit, with my heart, that I think is the best for the county because there's no difference here between the county interests and the city interests. What works for the city here is things that we've talked about in the comprehensive plan. Yes, it's possible that some people will get scared by this, but, you know, when we talked about I'm going to start to digress too much here. Too much too fast is the argument that's made sometimes. And I can say to you, when it comes to making social changes, too much too fast is a viable argument only if you haven't been affected by the negative effects of not enough, not soon enough. We need to get more housing downtown. I believe that this project is the most viable project. I'm talking about Travis Hyde. I want the Stream Project to have a home. I want the passion that's behind reuse to be utilized somewhere else. I know that there's a number of businesses involved, and I know they have their own places that they might figure out how to use the sequestered energy from in another way. I'm not saying this right except to say that the argument for me that you can't build, this is the one project that you can't build anywhere else, didn't ring true for me, because you can always come up with a way to build. That's the beauty of builders and architects and construction workers and visionaries that are so much a part of the green building movement and other movements. I'm proud that here in this community we've got visionaries that will look ahead and that will push against what they see as prevailing winds. Here's what I'm going to say in summary. I honestly believe that this is going to improve the downtown. I believe that right now we're headed economically for some very tough times, and we need to make a decision on this now. When I first came to Ithaca, I noticed that the city was desperate, and I mean desperate, for funds, for sales tax funds. I mean, anybody that's a legislature, you know, we talked a little bit about capital tonight. We worry a lot about money, from the $200,000 that's going out the door on an airport that we desperately need, and it seems to be going up every year, to the sales tax monies that dropped this year, in part and perhaps mostly because gasoline prices have gone down. Well, guess what? Fossil fuels are going away. We got to figure out some new ways. I think that finding a way to get more people downtown is a way to do it, and I think we have a project that the developer will work with the downtown folks to implement. I think that the developer will work with historic the developer will work with the community and certainly will work with the Common Council, because there is a track record there. There's an understanding that proposals, and I know this from the IDA, what they start out to be and what they end up to be can change a lot due to economic factors, due to the labor market, due to materials costs, due to the things on site that you thought you had being different. And Biggs Building, I'm talking to you here right now. Nobody wants a stick building. Okay, I am digressing. This is a tough decision, and I know a lot of people have said, you know, they'll never vote for me again, and anybody that does this hates downtown. But I know there's been a lot of other people, and I'm looking at a lot of the people here that have said, we know this is a tough decision, and we know you're going to do your best, and I might not agree with you, but I know that your heart's in the right place. And it's not just y'all, it's everybody that I want to say, I'm here because I love it, and that's not going to change because of a decision like this. I know that I'll always wonder, you know, about it, but I believe that this group of people that's involved with it, they're not going to let something like this stop them. They got the vision. They're going to move ahead. They're going to find something, and in the meantime, what we have is a viable project that we need to go forward with. And that's why I brought this resolution tonight in the form that I did. I'm very curious to see if a majority of my colleagues will agree to move this forward without the whereases that I asked to be removed. Thank you for your time.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Much has been said about this project over the last couple of months, and what troubles me is the accuracy. When things are said over and over again and facts are given, the accuracy of the facts have changed. And they've diminished, actually, over time. People were very strong about certain kinds of things. And as time has passed, the things that they said have turned out to be not exactly the way they've stated it. And it's been interesting to me to watch this process move kind of in a rolling sort of way. I want to try to answer a question was asked here early on by an old friend, Tom Hanna, and he wanted us who are supporting project, any of the projects, tell why we're supporting the projects. And I think I said it months ago for me that this project is about density. I am supporting Travis Hyde. They offer the most density of any of the projects that we had. Frankly, I really kind of like the project, the Apollo project, when they came along, but they walked away because obviously they probably saw the process dragging out much longer than they wanted it to drag out. So they had better fish to fry. I think Travis Hyde also has answered some of the question that many of us around the table have talked about, and including Lifelong in their proposition. They have an MOU with them, and if they're approved here, then we will see how that all plays out. They have to go through a rigorous city approval process. We will have to see how they again will make out over there. It was also mentioned that the city supports this process or the Franklin project. And as a matter of fact, individuals from the city support it. 7 of the 10 city council people signed a letter. We do that all the time here. We sign letters. It's not a resolution. It's not binding. It's what 7 people thought was the best idea for the city. The mayor and 3 other people have not weighed in on this. And if I were the mayor, I would have not weighed in on it, because there's a benefit to the city of Ithaca in either project, if either project is approved. And so the smart thing for him to do and these other people were to leave the decision to the people that are making the decision on. I thought that was, a good thing to do. And the final thing for me is the whole idea of reuse and of the building has turned out to be, it started out as they're going to reuse parts of the building. It started out as a, this is the reason, this is the best project. And, if you think about it, and I believe I said it out loud here a couple of weeks ago, yeah, they're going to reuse some of the building. They're going to reuse the foundation and the structural metal that can be saved as the building is torn down. And, that's reuse to a certain degree, but, it shouldn't have the weight that people have put on it and for a reason to do something. So it's pretty simple for me. Density, it gets the most people downtown. That's what the city has the CTAP policy about. That policy has worked. People want to live downtown, and Travis Hyde is a way to get people downtown.
Peter Stein.
Well, like Jim, I too will support the Travis Hyde project, but I want to take a few minutes to explain why and to answer a couple of things that I've heard. I've gotten used to that group of people that sit over there when we come to a public meeting and start out by telling us why we should do the other project. And people have said, look, we're the people. You hear the people. You're supposed to represent the people. And here the people have decided that they want to have the Franklin Project. So you should support that. I've heard that a lot. And I've gone through my mind a little bit about, in the 5 years that I've been on this legislature, how many times have I heard a clear signal from the people like this one? And I can think of 2 previous occasions. And that was all I could think of. One was the occasion about the jail. And when we decided to make the jail somewhat larger than it was, and we had time after time, we had people in filling this room explaining to us why we shouldn't do that. That was one thing. And another one, which was even more, was when we came to the governor's gun control legislation, and the room was full of people saying that we had to vote against that. And in both of those 2 occasions, I realized that at least the people in the room, to the extent the people in the room represented the people in the county, I don't know that they are, but they were certainly filling that room, and the other people didn't come in to tell me their story. But I had no difficulty whatsoever about voting against the people that were demonstrating and telling us what to do at those times. And the reason I did that, the way I did that, was I tried to think about it myself and think about what was best for the county. And I don't think that our job should be to count people putting up their hands. I think if we had to do that, there'd be a better way of organizing this, where there was a poll. Everybody would take a poll, and then that would be the answer. But we are supposed to look as broadly as we can as what are the needs of the district and what is the best thing to do for the 100,000 people that we represent. And so it doesn't concern me that I don't agree on this occasion with the people that come in, even though I do recognize that they are the ones that seem to have the most interest in it and came and told me to do the opposite. So anyway, so why is it that I'm voting for the Travis Hyde thing? Well, there are, I think, three different reasons. To me, and I agree with a group of my colleagues who work much harder at this than I do, that the issue of our age is global warming. I'm completely convinced of that, and I believe that we should always, when possible, do something that is mandated by that. We ought to do the right thing when it comes to the global warming issue. And I know I wrote a letter to all of you, a note, and why I explained that why I believe that the Travis Hyde project is three times as good as the Franklin project when it came to global warming. I'm sure it isn't worth the time for me to explain my logic, but I've thought about it very much. I wrote down a formula, and that's what it comes out. Not three times, but 2.8 times as good as the Franklin project. And basically, the argument is, if one house that has a high LEEDS rating is good, two houses is better. And that's basically the argument. The argument is that if we really are committed to doing for what we can to reduce global warming, we should be pushing as much as possible for houses that reduce the carbon dioxide generation to the minimum. We ought to be supporting those houses whenever we can possibly can. This is an example. So that's, to me, that's the most important issue. The density issue, I never quite understand why that word density, so I'll just talk about it in my own way. It's clear to me that there are more people who want to live in Ithaca than those that can. And what I see when I drove to Dryden, and I see that stream of cars coming every single day from Dryden to Ithaca, it's clear to me that there are a lot of people who would rather be in Ithaca than in Dryden. I'm sorry, Mike, but would like to live here because they...
We don't need to go there.
What?
I'm only kidding.
Okay. People who would rather live here because they work here... And that it is important for us for more than one reason, one of which is the global warming reason, because it makes a lot of CO2. You generate a lot of CO2 driving from Dryden to Ithaca and back again every day. That it is important for us to increase the amount of housing that would be available to most people that come and drive into Ithaca and back. And what that means is that the Travis Hyde has got three times as many seats, and what's more, the prices that it's charging for are smaller than the prices that the Franklin Project is charging for that. So that's the second reason. And did I have a third reason? Oh, yeah, the third reason does not have anything to do with global warming, but has to do with Lifelong, which I think is an important organization that satisfies the needs of older people like me. I think that it's clear to me that they prefer the Travis Hyde operation than the Travis Hyde proposal than the Franklin proposal. And I think they know best about what's good for them. Basically, those are the reasons why I'm supporting the Travis Hyde. I don't see anything wrong. I don't see anything wrong with the Franklin Project, but nonetheless, I find that what I consider to be the important issues overwhelmingly support Travis Hyde. Therefore, I'm voting for it.
Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes. From the very beginning, when we've been discussing these projects, and in my time in the IDA, and I forget how many years I've been on the IDA, but it's been a few years, is that I've been a big proponent of more housing. And And the reason for that is because I've dealt with it personally. You know, the mayor is on a limited salary. He happens to be my roommate, right? I too am as well. And it's been very hard for us year to year to find places that we can afford. And then my fiance, she was looking for a place in town and couldn't find anything above the $900 mark that was a quality place for her to live in the community. And that's with her having a job working for the New York State Diagnostic Labs up at Cornell for the vet school. I mean, and so there really is, I think, a housing crisis in Ithaca. And obviously, it's not just me thinking that. It's a well-documented thing, and studies have shown it. So, but I like both projects. And I've been a supporter of the Franklin Project from the first vote because it was able to bring 20 units, not 60, I understand, but still get that, bring in those 20 units of condos that I thought would be good for the community. So tonight I was prepared to support anything to support the Franklin Project. But as many of my colleagues know, I'm somebody that likes progress and I like to look at the end game. And what I've seen is that while if there was any resolutions that came forward supporting Franklin, I would definitely be voting for it tonight. But I've been able to have conversations with many of my colleagues on the legislature, and it seems that there are six people in favor of the Franklin Project, if you include me, and there are seven people in favor of the Travis Side Project. Voting to send this back to committee, a committee that's made itself very clear where it stands, I believe is just stalling on the vote. I don't think that the Franklin Project has enough votes to pass. In fact, you would have to have two legislators change their mind in order for that to pass. And so I have thought very long and hard about, you know, should I continue to stall this project because I want the Franklin Project? And this has been a very difficult discussion for me. I had about 6 hours driving from Maryland now to think about it even further, which is just, you know, my own special kind of hell. but I think what did it for me is just while I was in Maryland, my mother and father, they're no longer together. And so my mom had to find this one-bedroom apartment. And, you know, the College Park area, that's where she works, also has a very low vacancy rate, hard to find affordable places in the area. And so she's living currently in a studio apartment with my little brother. And that's what she could afford. And when it was the whole family there with his medical emergency, it was pretty cramped. It was pretty tough. And if there were better housing options in the area, she probably would be able, and more supply, I think it would make a difference for her. And I know that's a different town, but as I was telling you with my own experiences of not just myself, but my fiance and then friends that I know, is that it's hard to find housing. And housing is so key to having a good quality of life. So if my choice is to delay this project, any project, even further by sending it back to committee and getting more information about this and getting more information for that, when I know very clearly that one project has more support than the other, I feel that I'm not doing my duty as a legislator. And at the end of the day, I have maintained that I'm for more housing, especially in the downtown core. And so, you know, like I said, if something comes up in favor of Franklin, I'd be voting for it. But if the only vote ends up being the vote for Travis Hyde tonight, which it appears it will be, I'm prepared to support that in order for us to move forward, get this into the city's hands so that the city, the Landmarks Commission, and all the other agencies that have valuable community input into the project, that they could put in their input in the project. The developer may change things, and Travis Hyde has been willing to change things to accommodate what community needs are. And I think we need to let it go through that process, and we shouldn't let the legislature be the let this stall any further. I also don't want to see that site continue to be vacant, being a drain to taxpayers, and it is a considerable drain every year in just maintaining that building. And I don't want to see that site also go up for auction, because then we don't really know who's going to end up taking over that building. So I believe that the most responsible thing for me to do tonight is a vote for progress, and I'm willing to support Travis Hyde because of that.
Carol Chuck.
Are there other people in line?
After you is Dooley Kiefer.
Because I thought I was responding to something that Nate said, but I'll wait and go later.
You're passing. Julie Kiefer.
Right. Come back to me later.
Mike, I'd like to ask a couple of questions of people in the audience. Is that okay? The things I'm interested in are from Travis Hyde or Holt Architects. How much could the city downsize your proposal and still have it be financially viable?
I don't know. How do folks feel about this? We're putting folks on the spot.
That's not a legitimate question that I think a developer can answer.
It's a very legitimate question.
Well, it's a legitimate question, but I think it's improper, and a developer should not have to answer
that. Let the developer have a chance to say that. If he doesn't want to answer it, he'll find a way not to answer it.
The reason I'm asking is that we have heard passionate support for density, whatever that means, although the difference between 22 and 60 is not as great in the greater scheme of things as it seems tonight. But I was cognizant of the fact that city staff who will be working with the developers have indicated it's not of an appropriate scale. So I'm sure that the developers have thought about this, and I'm sure some of us have been wondering about it, so I thought I'd just ask tonight if there is a number that they are willing to tell us, how much it could be downsized and still be viable.
I guess at this point I would give the option, but not say that any developer has to respond to any questions at this point. It's up to them. Does anybody want to respond on that, or shall I go move on? Travis?
Well, I think that... Okay, good. Honestly, I haven't done a lot of analysis around that. We're at the RFP stage of this proposal. A lot can change. When I did the Carey building, or which I'm doing right now, I needed two additional stories, and I needed a height variance. And Historic Ithaca opposed the variance because they said the building was out of scale. So I sat with them, listened to their concerns, and forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but this is an accomplishment I'm proud of, and I think it also speaks to our willingness to engage with the community. We listened to them, and at the first variance hearing, they did speak out against us, and at the next one, after we incorporated their concerns, they spoke in favor of us. I think this is an iterative process. So I can't answer, you know, how big, how many units, what's the upset number, because if you change the size of the building, you may change the construction methodology. 50% reduction, sure. That would probably kill the project. But what would fit? What is the threshold? I can't answer that without having the input from all of the stakeholders, including ILPC and Historic Ithaca and, of course, the planning board. I mean, I think it is iterative. Every time you run through it, you're going to get a different answer because things will change. I'm sorry that I can't give you a definitive number, but that's the best I can do to explain.
Thank you for your response.
Yeah, I appreciate your willingness to... I appreciate addressing the issue. The other question that I have, and that, this is lifelong related. Lifelong was not a requirement, but it's become determinative. And the most recent material that was forwarded to me, I think was forwarded to all legislators by our county administrator, was a communication from the interim director, Mary Pat, who is here in the audience. And there it becomes clear that the board has finally begun to consider the possibility of putting 121 West Court on the market, which our county assessor had told us a long time ago would be very saleable and should provide a needed infusion of cash. I hadn't known what bad financial situation Lifelong was in until recent months. I mean, we started this a long time ago, and I had no idea that was how bad things were. So I guess I would, my question would be to Mary Pat, is it, are you very likely to be putting 121 West Court on the market soon, so you will at least get some money to be able to feel you can breathe again?
I would say the same thing at this point. If they want to respond to you, they can. If they don't want to respond, it's all right.
Dooley, I have to give a somewhat evasive answer, for which I apologize, for two reasons. One of them is that's a board decision to make, not an interim executive director decision to make. The second one is it does involve sort of internal negotiations and confidential information, but I think I can say that I think I can say one thing very definitively. We've worked really hard over the past 2 months to present to you as legislators a candid representation of lifelong situation. But the flip side of that coin is that we really don't, the last thing that I think anyone on the board of Lifelong or myself would want is that decision to be made on the basis of Lifelong's financial difficulty or lack thereof. It's our job to get ourselves out of that difficulty. We're working very hard as a staff and board team to do that. And in order to do that, we have to examine all our financial options. And we have even engaged, through the kindness of a former county colleague of mine, who has put us in touch with Tom Lavigne of Cornell Real Estate, who's helping us do the depth of investigation of our options that I wish I had the capability to do myself, but don't. So we have to seriously look at all our options and are digging down into those options right now, and the board will make what they think is the best decision for Lifelong's long-term future.
I appreciate your addressing the issue also. The, excuse me, I don't know anyone who doesn't want Lifelong to succeed, even if the new cohort of seniors don't think of themselves as seniors. They're getting older. So at this point, I guess I would like to move to amend the member-filed resolution to substitute Franklin Properties Stream Collective, and to add an additional resolved, which I will read and see if anyone wants to second this. Resolve further that in accepting this designation, Franklin Properties will apply for a 2016 New York State RECD grant to be used to construct a building facing Court Street on Lifelong property that will provide adequate facility space for the not-for-profit senior center Lifelong. So that's my
motion. We have a motion for an amendment. Is there a second? Nathan?
I'm only seconding it because this is the language that I asked Julie for last meeting, and she worked very hard on adding it.
Right, so the amendment has been moved and seconded. Discussion on the amendment. Carol Chalk.
Well, I have a couple of questions. One would be for Franklin, Mr. Sutherland. It's on the amendment as to whether that wording is acceptable to you in terms of what your intentions are.
Well, again, Mr. Sutherland may
is that something
or
you could
answer.
Is that something that you feel like you would commit to should we pass it?
I think so. I hadn't seen or heard the amendment before. I'd like to look at the language a little more closely, but we indicated to you recently that we had taken two different approaches to Lifelong, one with a building that would be constructed for them, another that was a variation of that, and I think this is probably growing out of that. I'd like to see that language a little more and be able to think about it a bit, but the last correspondence we set out that laid out what we'd attempted to do with Lifelong. There was an initial plan and there was a second plan. We're comfortable with either of those, and I think that what Dooley is describing is incorporated in that proposal, those two proposals that we gave earlier and reiterated probably 4 weeks ago or so.
That was my intention, and I apologize for not getting it to you. I needed to show it to me.
Oh, no, that's fine. Thinking through to make sure that I understand the language I'd like to do that before saying definitively, but we were comfortable with option A under a letter that I sent to it was addressed to Brian Wilbur, but with copies to all the legislature. There was an A proposal, and then there was a B proposal after we began to understand more clearly that Lifelong's most immediate need was for cash to replenish the till. And we were comfortable with either of those at the time. We still are comfortable with either of those solutions. And I think what Dooley is describing is in the spirit of Plan A or Plan B, each of which we still feel comfortable with.
Can I ask Dooley?
You still have the floor, Carol.
Can I ask?
Thank you, Mrs. Sutherland.
So I had a couple of other things to ask in consideration of this. One is for Dooley to just read it again. And I have one after that.
Resolved further that in accepting this designation, that's as preferred developer, Franklin Properties will apply for a 2016 New York State RECD grant to be used to construct a building facing Court Street on Lifelong property that can or will provide adequate facility space for the not-for-profit senior center Lifelong.
Okay, and can I ask Mary Pat to answer one other question, if she's willing to, which is...
Same ground rules.
I understand that, which is whether you have a sense of the amount of time that your current investigations with Mr. Lavigne and others will take before you know a little bit more about the advantages and disadvantages of various options for you. It's about the amount of time that you anticipate needing.
All I can say is that we're moving as quickly as we can and trying to get the information that we need in terms of financial pro formas to dig deep into all our options. The committee has done a tremendous amount of work over the past 2 years, and now we're just trying to take that information to a new level and to make sure that we re-examine what we have looked at in the past. So I can't give you an end date, unfortunately.
Thank you for the response.
Even versus months versus years?
Certainly not years.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. So what's the order of precedence of motions? I know that Nate had a strong preference to not just stall this, but in the interest of, because Lifelong has taken on such importance in people's decisions about which of these to support, and because our last course of action when this came to us before was to refer it back to committee for several purposes. One was to work out wording such as Dooley's proposing, the wording that I was interested in about, at what point does the sale of the property happen and under what conditions, and because we would have more information that I don't see it as just stalling.
If I'm permitted to,
in terms of the order of motions, I wanted to move to postpone this whole matter.
I think you could bring a motion to postpone
until after
is
the
that
old
correct, John?
For 2 months.
At this point,
John, please use the mic.
I believe you could bring a motion to postpone, but only on the motion that's before you.
So not on the amendment.
Oh, so it would only be on the amendment then?
Well, at the moment, what's on the floor is the amendment.
Correct.
So I think one would have to move to postpone that until you get back to the original motion, because the original motion is not now on the floor.
Right. So we need to dispose of the amendment one way or the other.
Okay. Well, then I would speak in favor of the amendment for the reasons that I've talked about here before, and which I'll summarize. Most important, we all have our reasons that we've supported various projects. For me, the importance of the fact that there has been not one new owner-occupied unit in the city of Ithaca built in the last 5 years in a way that it came on the open market. There have been a few built. They either went to income-qualified buyers or to people who knew the developer. There have not been enough built, as opposed to rental market units, of which many, many, many have been built. And so for me, the role of government in making a decision is to help fill in and help point the way and help in the demonstration projects that show that owner-occupied units can be built, providing a base of residents, long-term residents, invested in our community. The energy choice. I have a question for Frost, if you're willing to answer. Last time you talked to us about your willingness and your actual activity in reinvestigating the energy choice for your building. Are you prepared to say anything further about that?
Well, I'll point out again that this is at the RFP stage, and to pick one energy system over another I think is premature. That said, I certainly did go to Sustainable Tompkins just to ask the question, well, could this be an all-electric building? Given that the sun's not always shining and the wind's not always blowing, could you do renewables for this project? And I think the answer is maybe. Would it pencil? I don't know. I'm willing to consider it, and I mean I have considered it. Obviously, outside of the scope of our RFP response that we put forth, we came down in favor of the combined cooling, heating, and power. It's very early in the stage of development to commit to one thing or another. Am I open to exploring it? Absolutely. But also, I think it's important to respect the time of all of the architects and consultants, not just Holt, but also Stream and all of the others, that they've put out, that's time at risk, and that's how they make their living, is with fee. And I would be ashamed to see all of that thrown out if this doesn't come to a vote this evening. For Franklin or for me, at this point, I hope that you will come to a decision and respect the value of all the time and effort that's been put into this project. That's also, I have to place a limit on how much time I can put into exploring this, all of the different heating options. I can't do an exhaustive study. I've got a business to run, so does Graham, so does Noah, so does Mr. Sutherland. So, sorry, I kind of took his tangent there. I'll stop talking now.
Okay, thank you very much. So, again, on energy choice, for me, I'm not hearing as much of a commitment from one developer as from the other as to either the use of embedded energy or the long-term energy choices, which makes the affordability of a building so much lower in the long run. Another reason for me has to do with the amount of money that will come on our tax rolls. A mixed-use development with the tax structure that we have according to estimates and the values of the buildings that are being proposed right now, add well over a million dollars to our tax rolls over time, more than the other. And given how we're hurting and the numbers we hear, That for me rises to one of the important considerations. At the same time, that because of the nature of condo ownership, the tax bill for people who live in the rental, in the owner-occupied residential units, as opposed to the office and commercial units, the tax bill is so much lower that owning a $350,000 condo gives you the tax bill as though you have a $275,000 house. So in terms of the issues of affordability, I put both of these projects in the same category, you know, as do the numbers. And you've heard tonight on, you know, my ability to hone in on numbers and open the documents and find the one spot among the numbers. It's what I did at Cornell for 23 years.
You've got some other points you'd like to speak.
So that brings me to another point, which is that the numbers on the rental costs, if you look at the numbers from our own assessment rolls, the numbers on the estimates for the rental costs for the rental development just can't be supported. You just can't support a $16 million building with the rents that are being cited. And I will be back in other meetings, including city meetings, quoting the numbers for one-bedroom and two-bedroom units when we see the prices go up, because I really just don't see that they can be anything close. 50% more, even double, is probably what would be needed to support a $16 million building. And finally, the streetscape in our downtown, in our crucial downtown area with mixed use. Everything in good planning practice says that in a downtown area, that to have vibrant streetscapes with entries and offices and cafes makes it a more livable city, and that is what I'd like to see. So for those reasons, I will support Dooley's amendment.
All right. I have Peter Stein and Dave McKenna.
All of this discussion, I believe, is out of order. Dooley made an amendment, and we're not talking about the
amendment.
Well,
I think
so.
I'm wondering
if we could just call
a question.
I think
because the amendment changes the designated developer, I think it's in order. That's my feeling.
Well, then, can I call a question on Dooley's amendment?
No.
You can call the question on the amendment.
No, but you spoke to the...
I'm sorry? Oh, that's right. You already spoke. It's your rule, Peter. All right, we'll go to Dave McKenna.
Well, that was my purpose.
Cool.
Call a question, please.
Is there a second to calling the question? Mike Sigler. And then I think we have to vote on calling the question. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 13. That's right. Okay. Just have to make sure we get the right numbers here. All right, so we're back to the amendment that Dooley has proposed. It does two things. It changes the preferred developer in the resolution from Travis Hyde to Franklin Group. And it also adds the language requesting that the Franklin Group go forward with respect to the grant proposal. So let's have a vote on this, unless you want to talk about it more.
The question's called.
That's right. We called the question. You're right. All right. Let's have a roll call vote.
Mr. Stein?
Calling the question, aye.
No.
This is on the
call.
This is on the amendment.
Supporting Franklin and with you.
We'll be changing the developer and adding the grant language.
Mr. Stein?
I'm against the amendment.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm for the amendment.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No. I mean, no.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Mori?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
6 ayes, 7 noes,
one abstention. We're back to the original resolution as proposed by Kathy Luz Herrera. You want to talk more about that? Will Burbank.
Thank you. I want to thank Nate for his sharing his thinking process. I know it's not that easy, and I share with you the fear of just putting this on the open market. I think that would be the worst outcome. But there was another possibility that if we failed to act, which was that essentially we could sell it to the city. That has been proposed. I think it's not an unreasonable solution because I think this project is going to be changed by the city's approval process, perhaps in pretty significant ways, and I think that would be an entirely appropriate thing. So I will be voting against this motion, but with the hope that we could explore alternatives such as that. I am for the Franklin project because I think it does a lot of positive things in the ways that other people have mentioned. I wish it did more for lifelong, and I know that is a determinative factor for many people. One of the concerns that I have, though, as I understand that program, and I'd love to be proven wrong, is that I think the parking is grossly inadequate to service lifelong. And, if this moves ahead, I hope to be proven wrong, but I honestly don't see how that works. Finally, I want to thank both development teams for their patience, for the creativity, for the countless hours that we can't even begin to imagine that they have both put into this process, and mostly for their civility toward us. I've talked with both of them, and you know, even though they're competing fiercely to get this job, they have been respectful to us. Perhaps maybe not unnecessarily so, but they, at least publicly, they've been very, very respectful, and to each other. And I really, really appreciate that. And I think we have been fortunate to have two developers that have been part of this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Others, can I just make one comment as chair of the committee that we did approach the city very early on about whether they would be interested in having the building. I would have loved to see the city do it, but we did not get a positive response at the committee. Carol Chalk, on the main motion.
Yeah, first, I just need to say something about this, the use of tabling. I understand when we've been talking about something for a really long time and everybody's gotten to, calling the question. You're right. It's getting repetitive here. I understand we've been talking about something for a really long time and it's obvious where everybody has stood that evening to say we've had enough, but it just seems like we're moving more and more to using calling the question when one person or a few people have had a chance to talk and others haven't. It just seems like we could find a way to be a little more respectful of our peers, and it's why I often vote against it. So I just want to say that I thought that this was a particularly inappropriate use tonight when people had a chance to talk about the Travis project and people had not had a chance yet to talk about the Franklin project. didn't seem appropriate. I want to come back to the notion of postponing for 2 months. And I really I really don't mean this.
You want to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion and then
you
talk
want,
about
you
it.
You want to move a motion to postpone for 2 months?
Yeah, I wanted to give my rationale first before
well,
I...
Well, why don't you do it, then I'll let you speak.
Okay. I'd like to move to postpone this for 2 months.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Go ahead.
Okay. So I really don't mean this as a stalling tactic. And if people feel that it just would be a stalling and we'll come back in the same place, then go ahead and vote against it. But I think that we've discussed several possible conversations that could be had. We've heard from Lifelong that they're actually engaged somebody and are investigating options for themselves. The notion has come up of having further conversations for the front with the city. Those first conversations were, what, over a year ago, well before the Landmarks Preservation Commission weighed in, well before we heard from seven common council members. We've heard discussion of wording and detailed wording about holding various developers to things. So, and we had sent it back to committee. So it just seems to me that it's appropriate and not stalling to give the committee time to do its work on this with the intent to really do hard work and come back to us. This issue is tearing us apart. It's tearing the community apart. It's not going to feel good at this point, no matter what we decide. So I'd urge us to do that.
Are we ready to vote on the motion to postpone for 2 months? I guess not. Dan Klein.
Just going to make a brief statement. Yeah, so I also I am not doing this in the spirit of stalling. There's clearly a lot has been put on Lifelong in this situation, and clearly things are changing fast at Lifelong. They just had a board of directors meeting on Thursday and generated a couple of pages of information and internal communications to vote. Now to seal the deal several days after they generate all this information really is not giving that part of it, part of the process, time to work itself out. You know, it may be after 2 months that we're back where we were and we'll take the vote and such it is, but I really think since such Lifelong has been made such a central part of this and a lot is changing there right now, day by day, we really do owe it to the whole process to give it a little more time to work out and see what happens.
We got a lot of hands. I've got Kathy next, then Nathan, then Mike, then Peter.
I'm not going to support this motion, and I will tell you why. My support for the Travis Hyde project really doesn't have anything to do with Lifelong. I am interested to see how all that turns out, but I believe that their project is viable with or without Lifelong, and much as people would like to make that a central part, it actually isn't. And I think that the proposal to delay will damage the community, although I take exception to the notion of us all being torn apart by this. In fact, I think we're being made stronger by it. I'm certainly getting an education. I think anybody with an open mind is learning more about lots of different topics from this, and to my recollection, learning never hurt anybody. I won't support this.
Nathan?
Yeah, I was just going to say something similar, which is that I think that if you look at the people that support Travis Hyde, that it's not just Lifelong, but there's other aspects of the project that they're supporting. I don't think it will change their vote if there was new information related to that.
Mike?
I must have a thinner skin than you guys. I actually take great offense to that. I mean, I've been working on this for like 2 years. I mean, it's great that you guys are saying, oh, we need more time now. But, I mean, you act like there wasn't a committee put together. You act like we weren't going to meetings for the last 2 years and weren't getting information. And, I mean, this was pretty well considered by the people who voted for this.
Toughen up, Mike.
It's fine. I mean, it's fine that you disagree with the conclusion. I mean, I'm okay with that. But, I mean, we could drag this out forever and say, well, we need more information on that. Well, yeah, I guess you could always get more information on it. We could get more information on the soil samples that are going to happen underneath the building. And, I mean, you could go forever. So, I mean, I understand that you're not happy with the way some people are voting here. I don't have any animosity towards the people that are voting for Franklin. It's a viable project, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that they're a good developer. I'm assuming Travis Hyde's a good developer. I think that both projects have merits. But to act like this is coming out of some kind of vacuum, like, oh, I can't believe these people have jumped to this conclusion, is nonsense. So that's
Peter?
My 2 cents on it.
I think I'll withdraw my comment.
I'd like to go to a vote on the motion to postpone. It would be till the first meeting in October would be what the postponement would be. All those in favor of the
roll call vote, please.
Okay. Well, on the we'll call a roll call vote. An aye vote is voting to postpone for 2 months.
Mr. Stein?
Nay.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Absolutely not.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No. Anyone wish to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
4 ayes, 9 noes, 1 abstention.
The motion to postpone fails. We're back on the floor with the original motion. Are we ready to vote on that? Julie Kiefer.
I wanted to mention that there is yet another alternative to putting something on the open market and seeing what happens, or asking the city again. It's putting it on the open market as a ground lease, that amazing possibility that would still let us control how the property were used. So that hasn't been mentioned tonight, and I find that a viable alternative also.
Is it in here?
No.
All right, are we ready to vote on the main motion?
Yes.
I will ask for a roll call. So the motion is to designate Travis Hyde as the preferred developer and does not contain the language respect to the trying to get a ground lease, although that remains in the RFP.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. The motion is agreed to. Thank you.
Can we announce the vote, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? All right, please announce the vote.
8 ayes, 5 noes, 1 abstention.
Motion is agreed to. Minutes of the previous meeting, July 1st, 2015. Someone want to move those?
Move.
Is there a second? Second by Peter Stein. Ready to vote on the minutes. All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Any unfinished business tonight?
Mr. Chair.
Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
By Glenn Morey, seconded by Jim. Thank you, everyone. No, it wasn't easy, but thank you for your efforts tonight.
Thank you.